On Robotenhaus. Yeah, I hope I didn't miss any other honorable member. Welcome, honorable members. Just in terms of today's proceedings,
I'm also present, Honorable Chair.
honorable Vittal, yeah,
Yeah.
okay, I'm all right. No, welcome. Just in terms of today's proceedings, honorable members, we have three agenda items. The one is the in relation to the Correctional Services Amendment Bill. The second thing relates to the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. And then the third one, we would continue with the Combating of Hate Crimes, Hate Speech Bill. Our members, welcome. Let me also take this opportunity to welcome the Deputy Minister for Correctional Services, the Deputy Minister for Constitutional for Justice and Constitutional Development. I see Ben is up. DM, I'll address you in a moment. Let me also welcome I would imagine the National Commissioner is also present for Correctional Services. We also have Judge Cameron on the platform, who's the inspecting judge for the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services. Obviously the legal teams that are busy on these bills and other officials from the department. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all of you. DM, your hand, I'm not sure if you want to raise a matter, but I see your hand has been raised. DM.
Yeah, Chair, thanks. Sorry for thanks for indulging me. I just wanted to say that I will be traveling in a car from 10:45, and then in a having to attend a function from 11:45 to 1:00, and then probably traveling in a car again there. So obviously at the function, the hour and a quarter, I'll be offline, but while I'm traveling, hopefully the connectivity will be okay. Sorry, I just wanted to say that now, because I'm not sure at what point you'll get to judicial matters. So thanks to my colleague, Deputy Minister Hulumisa, and to Justice Cameron for the indulgence as well, and to the members. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable VM Jeffries. Yeah, I think you did also raise that to some extent with my office. But be that as it may, yeah, when we come to that agenda item, we can deal with that matter. I think in addition to the apology from Honorable Dango is out of the country, Gershwin, is there any other apology that I might have missed?
Good morning, Chairperson, members and guests. No, Chairperson, no further apologies.
No further apologies. Okay. Okay, with that being said, our members, we'll then move into the first agenda item, which is on the briefing on the Correctional Services Amendment Bill. Essentially, our members, the bill seeks to amend the Correctional Services Act 111 of 1998 and to align it with the Constitution and the Sonke judgment to provide for an adequate level of independence of the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services and related matters. And just to remind members that this bill also has a constitutional court deadline of the 4th of December 2023. That being said, let me hand over then to the Deputy Minister for his overall comments. Deputy Minister Hulumisa, I'm not used to having two DMs in my meeting, Deputy Minister. You better just bear with me.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, I'll hand
No.
over to you.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Not to be found to be mimicking Deputy Minister John Jeffrey. If it were to happen that by 12 o'clock we are still dealing with this bill, I will ask that I be excused because I have a flight to catch down to Cape Town. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank
Honorable.
you,
Yes, ma'am.
DM, but I'm sure we'll be done by then.
That's my hope.
Okay.
Honorable Chairperson and the honorable members, officials from the Department of Correctional Services and other departments that may be here, particularly DOJ and head of the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services, Justice Cameron. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. As you have said, Honorable Chairperson, we are here we are thankful to you for affording us the opportunity to engage and get benefit from your wisdom and insight as a committee, as we appear in order to present and debate the Correctional Services Amendment Bill in compliance with the Constitutional Court judgment in the what we call Sonke matter. I am leading this delegation of the department on behalf of the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, who is unable to make it here due to other government commitments abroad. He said I should tender his apology before this committee for being unable to be part of this critical engagement. As you have said, Chairperson, the Correctional Services Amendment Bill was developed to give effect to the Constitutional Court judgment, which was handed down on 4 December 2022. In the matter between Sonke Gender Justice and the President of the Republic of South Africa and others. The Constitutional Court found certain sections of the Correctional Services Act to be unconstitutional and ordered the amendment of those sections by Parliament within a period of 24 months from the date of the order. The sections referred to are sections 88A1B and 91 of the Act and were declared to be inconsistent with Section 7, subsection 2 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The court held that impugned provisions are constitutionally invalid to the extent that they fail to provide an adequate level of independence to the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services. The relevant sections of the Act had to be amended in compliance with the Sonke judgment before 4 December 2022. However, we had to request an extension of the period from the Constitutional Court, which granted it, to make the deadline for the finalization of this bill the 3rd of December 2023. In order to comply with the court's extended deadline, the Department of Correctional Services, in conjunction with the JICS, developed a JICS bill and a Correctional Services Amendment Bill to cure the defects found by the court. Initially, the JICS bill was developed to repeal the relevant sections in the Correctional Services Act concerning JICS, including correcting the impugned provisions. The readiness of the JICS bill to be introduced into Parliament was, however, highly dependent on a final determination by National Treasury on the business and funding model of JICS. This also included the appointment of an accounting officer for JICS, currently being the National Commissioner of Correctional Service. A final determination was made by the Minister of Finance. Both the Ministers of Finance and the Minister of Public Service and Administration have given their support that JICS be established as a government component. The only issue to be determined by Treasury before the JICS bill is finalized and the request to establish JICS as a government component can be tabled is the approval of the budget for JICS. I am advised that the parties are currently engaging on this issue and nearing conclusion. In the absence of a final determination of the budget on the budget of JICS and the delays experienced regarding the business and funding model for JICS, and having less than 12 months to comply with the deadline, the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services approved that a Correctional Services Amendment Bill be introduced to cure the defects in the Act in order to comply timeously with the deadline. The CSA bill was developed, consulted upon internally, presented to the National Council of Correctional Services, the advisory body to the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. It obtained exemption for social economic impact assessment from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, the Justice and Crime Prevention System Cluster, Directors General and Ministers. The bill was recommended by Cabinet for introduction to Parliament on 10 May 2023. The National Assembly has passed the Amendment Bill and we seek the concurrence of the NCOP. Chairperson, the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor issued a final certificate on 19 May 2023 on the constitutionality of the bill and found it to be properly drafted in the form and style which conforms to legislative practice. The department complied with Rule 276 of the Rules of the National Assembly in that the notice of intention to introduce the bill in the National Assembly, including the explanatory summary, was published in the Government Gazette on 26 May 2023. The department also complied with Rule 159 of the Joint Rules of Parliament by submitting ministerial letters to the Speaker of the National Assembly and the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, respectively, together with the final proof of the Correctional Services Amendment Bill and the Memorandum of Objects. The bill was published for public comment, three submissions were received, and public hearings were held through the Portfolio Committee. The department responded to the submissions and presented a clause-by-clause presentation to the Portfolio Committee, which was adopted by the said Honorable Committee. Briefly, in order to comply with the Constitutional Court judgment, the Correctional Services Amendment Bill aims to amend the Correctional Services Act as follows. A, by inserting definitions for 1, head of the remand detention facility, 2, sexual violations, and 3, torture. B, making amendments to sections 30 and 31 concerning segregation and restraints. Making amendments to section 88A regarding matters related to the chief executive officer of FICS. D, making amendments to section 91 regarding the expenses of FICS and the CEO as the accounting officer for FICS. And E, by inserting section 95D regarding mandatory reporting measures by the department to FICS. In conclusion, Madam Chairperson, honorable members, we recommend that the Select Committee notes the progress in implementing the Constitutional Court judgment in the matter of Songhe Gender Justice versus the President of the Republic of South Africa, and 2, to support the Correctional Services Amendment Bill in accordance with Rule 159 of the Joint Rules of Parliament for amendment to the Correctional Services Act. It is trusted that this bill will be supported by the NCOP. Once more, let me thank the committee for this opportunity to engage, and we eagerly anticipate your valuable insights and guidance. At this point, I shall hand over to the department to take honorable members through the presentation and submit it to the committee under the guidance of yourself, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM. I think you're handing over to the department to make a more detailed presentation, I would imagine. Yeah.
Sorry, I beg your pardon, Chairperson.
DM, yeah, you're still continuing with taking us to the ball, right? My understanding is that you're handing over to the department. Your legal teams and all the so the commissioner. All right. Over to yourself. National Commissioner. I see a camera open of Zikalala S. from the Department of Correctional Services. Perhaps give us this direction in terms of how you're taking this process forward.
Mr. Katenga was making the presentation.
Oh, okay.
I'm asking him.
Okay.
Good morning, good morning, Chairperson and members of the Select Committee. We have Mr. Jacques Van Wyk, who is from our legal services. He is with Mr. Zikalala, who is our deputy commissioner responsible for intergovernmental relations. So Mr. Jacques Van Wyk will take us through an overview of the presentation. I think we would also request that Mr. Zikalala be allowed to share the presentation on the screen for the members. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. Gershwin, do they have sharing rights? If you could maybe just arrange that. Okay, Mr. Zikalala's thing, yeah, I think you have those rights. You can please share the presentation and continue. Mr. Van Wyk can continue.
Honourable members, honourable deputy ministers, and colleagues. I'm Jacques Van Wyk, of Correctional Services, Legal Services. Thank you for the opportunity to provide to make this submission regarding the final details of the envisaged amendment to the Correctional Services Act to, amongst others, comply with the Constitutional Court judgment. Subject to the justice matter. I will start at page number 5 of our presentation regarding the discussion on the envisaged sections to be amended. With regards to the proposed amendments to section 1, as the DM has already mentioned, to insert new definitions, first one being the head of remand detention facility. The reason being there are various sections in the Principal Act, as well as in clauses 2 and 3 of this bill, which refers to the head of the remand detention facility without the meaning thereof being defined in the Act. Therefore, it needs to be inserted to create legal certainty regarding the term as used in relation to JICs and other spheres within the Act. The second set of definitions we propose to insert into the Correctional Services Act is sexual violations. This is as a result of...
Mr. Van Wey? Mr. Van Wey,
proposed Section 95B, which I will agree to later on.
Mr. Van Wyk, I'm not sure if it's just myself, but I you are breaking up a bit.
No, it's even on my side as well.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Smith. Mr. Van Wyk, I'm not sure if how you can improve your bandwidth, but you're not coming out clearly to us.
Honourable Chair, yes, thank you. We are attending to that. Am I audible?
Yes.
Now?
Yes, you are.
Okay, so shall I just commence from the start?
We do have the presentation as well, so I think you are busy with definitions. Please continue.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With regards to sexual violations and torture, the reason being for the addition or the inserting into the Correctional Services Act is because of the newly proposed Section 95B regarding the mandatory reporting obligations by the BCS to JICs, which includes reporting on these issues of sexual violations and torture, and as such needs to be defined in the Act within the envisaged meaning thereof, the proposed section.
Mr. Van Wyk, I'm going to interrupt again. My apologies. But can I request that you put the presentation in presentation mode? And secondly, once again, I'm not sure if it's only on my side, but your presentation seems to be on. I think it's slide 4. And it's not moving, and I'm not sure if that's exactly where you're at.
Honourable Chair, yes, I was at page number 5, we are now at page 6, page 6 on the screen.
Okay, there's nothing on my screen yet. Honourable Members, can you see anything? Okay, I see some, okay, screen
share. Nothing on my side, nothing.
All right, is it fine now, Honourable Members?
Yeah, now we can see.
Okay, please continue, Mr. Van Wyk.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With regards to Section 30 and 31 concerning segregation and restraints of of inmates. The proposed amendments seek to insert a provision that inmates must be informed of their right to appeal against being subjected to segregation and restraints to the inspecting judge, that the head of the correctional center or remand detention facility must provide all relevant information relating to the appeal process on segregation and restraints to the inspecting judge within 24 hours from being requested to do so. These provisions are included in the bill to strengthen cooperation between the DCS and JICS, enhance the independence of JICS, to ensure greater transparency, to strengthen the human rights of inmates and to comply with ratified international instruments and laws. Moving on to the next slide, page 7, concerning section 88A, which talks to the appointment of chief executive officer. One will recall that one of the sections, the impugned sections, found by the Constitutional Court as being constitutionally invalid is section 88A1B. The proposal is to delete this provision that the CEO is accountable to the National Commissioner for Monies Received, and that it is to be reflected in section 91, to which I will I'll make a submission on after section 88A. Amendment, amending the appointment of the CEO from the National Commission to the Minister, so to amend that provision, to add the term career incidents under subsection 3 as found in the Public Service Act, and that matters related to the misconduct in the capacity of the CEO considered by the inspecting judge and referred to the Minister and not to the National Commissioner. Moving on then to section 91, one will recall that this is the other section, impugned section found unconstitutional by the Constitutional Court. It concerns the expenses of the judicial inspectorate. Currently, the provision is that the department will be responsible for the expenses of JICS. The proposal is to substitute this provision with a provision that expenses for JICS shall be defrayed from monies appropriated by Parliament to the departmental vote in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. The proposed amendment also includes that the CEO of JICS shall be appointed as the accounting officer of JICS. This is where I've alluded to earlier in relation or the connection with the deleting of section 88 capital A1B. As discussed earlier. Continuing at page number 9, with section 91, both the ministers of DPSA and Finance support that JICS be established as a separate government component, and the latter minister supports the proposed provisions amending section 91 in this bill. The request for the establishment of JICS as a separate government component will be tabled together with the new JICS bill as soon as the budget issues concerning JICS have been resolved. Moving on to page number 10, this is the proposed new section, section 95 capital B, regarding the mandatory reporting of the Department of JICS. The proposal is to insert this new section to outline the content of the mandatory reporting obligations of the Department to the inspecting judge. This will be in compliance with ratified international instruments and law, the Mandela Rules, and will bolster the public's perception. Cooperation between DCS. One can just mention that some of the provisions in 95D is also referred to or provided for elsewhere in the Act, and the idea was then to combine and consolidate the issues upon which the Department has to report to JICS on. Madam Chair, that is our submission. I think that Honourable Deputy Minister has already covered the compliance issues from page 11 and the route that it has taken, and it's then therefore echoed that we recommend that the Select Committee note the progress and implement the Constitutional Court's judgment in the Songhai matter and to the introduction of the Correctional Services Amendment Bill into Parliament in accordance with 159 of the Joint Rules of Parliament. I thank you, Madam Chair. That is our submission. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM and Mr. van Wyk. As I indicated earlier, that Judge Cameron is also on the platform. Perhaps if you want to have a word as well, Judge Cameron, you may do so now. Obviously, I mean, you might come later if members ask certain questions, but yeah. I know you've been quite instrumental in developing also the Correctional Services Amendment Bill. Judge Cameron.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and good morning to you and your Honourable Committee. I have very little to say, less even than Deputy Minister Holomisa and Mr. van Wyk, but I'm going to ask my colleague, the head of our legal division, Ms. Thembelihle Ngema, to say a few comments, and then she may be followed up also very briefly by our CEO, Mr. Vic Misser, who will simply emphasize, as I anticipate, that this is part one of a legislative process that we hope to see your committee on again next year when our substantive bill comes through to finalize the autonomy of JICs. But Madam Chair, with your permission, I ask my colleague Ms. Ngema to come in.
Thank you, Inspecting Judge. Good morning to you, Chair, and all the honourable members online. My name is Thembelihle Ndlanzi Ngema from the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services. I don't want to sound like a broken record. Mr. van Wyk has went through all the sections that are being amended, and we can confirm that together with DCS, we have consulted and discussed extensively these amendments, and we confirm what Mr. van Wyk has presented to the committee. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Ngema. And Judge Cameron, did you say there was someone else who's going to say something? But perhaps they could come through if there are questions that are specific to yourself as well.
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think that will be acceptable. Mr. CEO, is the Chair's suggestion that you respond to any questions arising about organisational form, autonomy and the JICS bill acceptable from your point of view?
Yes, thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Judge. DMs on the platform and all Honourable Members. Yes, we will engage further as the discussions unfold. Thank you so much, Honourable Chair. Judge.
Thank you, Honourable Judge. You covered as well. Okay, thank you very much for that. Honourable Members, we've received the briefing. If you have any questions for clarity that you would want to raise, I see Honourable Maleka's hand is up, Honourable Mikolakis to follow. Okay, in that order, Honourable Maleka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, can you allow me to switch off my video? I've got the load shedding.
No problem, Honourable Malik. As long as we've seen you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Chairperson. I was having a concern about the delay in introducing the bill, but anyway, to Parliament, but the Deputy Minister has provided an explanation for that. Then my question is on Clause 4, Amend Section 88A of Act 1998. It is not clear, however, what is meant by the term carrier incident, as this term is not in the definition section of the Principal Act. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maleka. Honourable Mikolakis.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Deputy Minister, Judge Cameron, and the members from the directorate and the department. Chairperson, I would like to start first with a question around the time frame of the bill before I get into questions on the bill itself. And that is that there has been 4 years available for this bill, and it's only coming to us now. The Constitutional Court deadline is the 3rd of December, and I believe this bill is on our program to be adopted in the plenary on the 29th of November, which is 3-4 days before the Constitutional Court deadline. My question to the department would be, if this committee proposes amendments, and it obviously then has to go back to the National Assembly, how are you going to deal with that situation? We have had bills before that come at the last minute to the NCOP, and then we expected to push them through. And ultimately, with a time frame like this one, for the time frame to be met by Parliament, it makes it very difficult. Should we want to exercise our right to make or to propose amendments and to pass amendments? With regards to the time frame. So I just want to know, if we propose any amendments, how would you be dealing with and how would perhaps we as a committee should also discuss how Parliament would be dealing with the fact that we are going to then miss the constitutional deadline. Perhaps it's not a question so much for the department chairperson as something that we as members need clarity on before we embark on this process. Having said that, questions with regard to the bill itself to the department are mainly based on 4 points that have been raised in the National Assembly. I know the points that were raised on that side, but I would very much like, for my own benefit, to just get an indication what the department's response is. The first issue that was raised in that phase was that there's no specific reference made to the obligations in terms of the national preventative mechanism. Then secondly, there seems to be no alignment to the Public Services Act when it comes to the appointment of the CEO. Why is that? And does the department not think that that is perhaps necessary to include that? Then there was also an issue raised that the recommendations made by the JICS are not binding. Is that a serious issue? And why was that not addressed in the bill? And then finally, the last point of concern that was raised in the other place was the JICS still won't be able to operate as a separate independent body as contemplated in the Sonke judgment. Those are the four issues that were raised, and I would very much, for my own benefit, as a first step, just like to hear the department's response to those concerns to be able to go forward. Thank you very much, Chairperson. As a last point, just before we proceed, if I may ask that we just also address the time frame issue. I am quite concerned. It's no use we bring a bill to our house, but for all purposes, we in a predicament where we can't propose any amendments without being without falling outside of the time frame set by the Constitutional Court. This shouldn't happen, and it's happening more and more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Office. I think, as you correctly said, well, the time frame is everyone's concern, but obviously, if we do not meet the time deadline, then obviously we as Parliament have to deal with that matter. And I think we have our legal representative as well on the platform who can also maybe speak to that matter. But perhaps let me just ask one more question to the department as well, in terms of the JICS draft bill that the deputy minister alluded to. When will that bill be introduced to Parliament would be my question. Maybe on the class, if you indulge me, we can get the department to respond. And the matter of what happens, I think it's, like you said, it it is more internal, but Ms. Lewis is on the platform as well. I think she's our legal person on this call. But in terms of previous practices on legislation that comes to us late, we've had to apply for extensions to the Constitutional Court on this matter. That much I know, and I would imagine that this would be a matter that with our legal support we would obviously look into. So if you might maybe pop that on.
I'd be happy to hear from her, Chairperson. It's important that we do deal with it, and it's as you say, and as I realized while talking, appropriate to ask her. It's not a question so much for the department. Thank you.
All right, let me hand over then first to the department, perhaps to respond. I think Ms. Lewis, you are on the platform. You could comment maybe later. Over to yourself, DM, in terms of addressing those questions, you or your team. Mr. Van Veek.
Yes, I think Mr. Van Veek will start as the leading person in this.
Mr. Van
Veek?
Thank you, Honorable DM. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks for the questions. With regards to the question from Honorable Maleka, it's not certain exactly what the question is regarding Section 88, Capital A. Can we just maybe get clarity on that question, please, before we continue with answering the rest of the questions?
I think she raised the issue of the term career incidents, what is meant by it. What is section? Yeah, in clause 4, yeah. And it's not defined. I got her question correctly. Maleka, are you covered? Okay, but anyway, I captured that question. I'm sure you understand.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes. If it's concerning the insertion of the concept of career incidents, is alluded to specifically in the Public Service Act. I think it is at Section 7, there and thereabout. With regard to career incidents, which refers basically to the appointment, transfers, secondments, probation, any career incidents that might be applicable. And in this context, be applicable to for clarity, just be the proposed new capital A at subsection 3, where we propose to say that from our career incidents to be inserted and other conditions of service, including salary and allowance of the chief executive officer, are regulated by the Public Service Act. So it's just to clarify that all those events, career incidents, will then be covered by the Public Service Act in principle. I hope that answers the question with regards to that point. Then with regards to Honourable Nicolakis, questions. With regards to that there's no reference in this, but with regards to the obligation of the NPM, also with regards to the alignment with the Public Service Act with regards to the appointment of the CEO and the powers and the functions of JICS, and more specifically being binding effect of
recommendations.
Yes, Honorable Chair?
I think once again you're breaking a bit. I'm not sure if you're looking at your papers and talking, but you, I can't hear you at some point. I don't know if it's just me again, our members, it's all of us.
I apologize.
Okay. Yeah, please, if you could just maybe repeat, I think with the issues that were raised by Honorable Nicolakis, You were trying to, you were starting to respond, and I think we lost you a bit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Am I more audible now?
Yes, you are.
Thank you very much. Yes, with regards to Honorable Mikolaga's questions, the first three questions concerning that there's no reference to the obligations in terms of the NPM. The second question with regards to that there is no alignment to the Public Service Act regarding the appointment of the CEO, and also the binding effect of JICSA's powers and or recommendations. Those issues are all addressed. The object of this correctional service article in the main is to secure the defects identified by the Constitutional Court, and that the parallel process, we are engaged in a parallel process with regards to the establishment of JICSA as a separate government component with DPSA and Treasury, which is quite an advanced stage, based by the Department of Public Service Administration. With regards to Treasury, and also version 20, and I will allude to the status of that bill in a second. Addressed in the proposed new JICSA. Question, you know, whether JICSA can will they be able to operate as a, it links basically with the response I've just made. I can just basically, in relation to Honourable Chair's question, about the status of the JICSA draft, we are currently engaging the relevant stakeholders with regards to the CS assessment. There has been the bill was presented to the NCCS previously with their comments, as well as a preliminary legal opinion from the Office of the Chief Technical Advisor on the bill. So that process is ongoing. Feverishly busy with that process. And it's envisaged that that bill, or the processes will be finalized and the bill will be ready to be introduced into Parliament that is next year. So one can just mention that we did submit this correctional service amendment bill and it was in the Parliament in June this year. But yes, that is our response and I submit accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Dijk. DM, are you covered?
Honourable DM, thank you.
Yes, unfortunately, the connection from Mr. Van Dijk's side has been very poor, and I think it's something that we need to address for the future. I didn't catch all the answers that he gave, but the point I wanted to make was that the Constitution has been... Correctional Services Amendment Act bill, rather, is meant to ensure that the Constitutional Court decision is being implemented by ensuring the independence of JICSA in the main. And therefore, once that independence has been assured through this bill, then we anticipate a situation where the JICSA bill, when it becomes an act, is going to address the manner in which that independence in various ways is going to be exercised by JICSA. So in short, therefore, one can say that this bill does not meet all the expectations generally generally emanating money from this Concord bill. But the effect of the matter is that the intention is to come up with a law that is going to ensure that in its operation and perception, RICS is independent indeed. So because there are various interactions that have had to be conducted with other departments, particularly Treasury, there was an undue delay in coming to a finality on how we should move forward on this amendment bill that we are handling now. So because of those dynamics, we have not been able, unfortunately, to meet the deadline, even the deadline that was extended to 3 December. We are now on the brink of coming to it, and has been indicated by the honorable member from the DA, there's always the likelihood that if you decide to exercise your right in considering this bill, we might find our situation in a situation where we are not able to meet that deadline. But it is our hope that because this is well, it's significant but simple in the sense that in our view and in the view of itself and other bodies that have been mentioned, it does comply with the Constitutional Court judgment. And therefore, the other outstanding matters, as I say, we expect them to be dealt with in the comprehensive RICS bill that is being dealt with. But to answer that question by the chairperson, I am not sure whether as this parliament will be able to finalize that bill, considering all the delays that have occurred regarding this simple amendment that we're dealing with now. But yes, that's all I can say, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DM and Mr. Van Zijl. Our members, just based on the responses, do you have any follow-up, number one, and or is there any other question that members would want to raise? Okay, Anno Mikolakis.
Thank you, Chair. Just one thing. When we get the briefing on the time frame, can we perhaps also, or if the department has time now, just get an indication for the reasons for the delay? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan Mikolakis. I think that's a quick follow-up. Maybe I see Judge Cameron, your mic is actually on. Perhaps if you could mute, unless you wanted to say something. Okay. All right. DM, do you want to respond to our Mikolakis?
Is he asking for us to give the reasons why there was a delay with respect to which the bill that is being drafted to set up RICS as a properly independent body, or the delays relating to us coming up with this amendment bill?
Maybe just clarify which, the bill, the RICS bill.
Chairperson, there seems to be so many delays that perhaps the Deputy Minister should cover all of them. Both the fact that it took 4 years minus a month for the bill to actually get to the NCOP, and we now put in this situation again. But while the Deputy Minister is at it, perhaps also the RICS bill, because if the response is that those four concerns are going to be addressed in the bill, then perhaps also the reasons for it taking so long might be addressed. Yeah, I am quite concerned. I do know that Justice Cameron said that early next year you might be seeing them again with regards to the substantive bill, but it's in an election year, and we all know what Parliament is like in an election year. We're going to come back in February for SONA, and then it's elections until June, July. So I am quite concerned about further delays, but if on both matters, this bill and the RICS bill, we can get an indication of why it is taking so long, I think it would help the committee going forward as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Anamika. I thought on the correctional services amendment bill, the department, the minister and the department had responded, Anamika Lucky. Unless they want to add some more to that, and then perhaps the also the reasons for the jigsaw. I thought there was they covered it to some extent, but perhaps they can respond to that as well. Over to you, DM.
Sorry for not muting it. Well, as you have correctly indicated, Chairperson, in my view, we have given the explanations as to why there was this delay. But if the honourable member would like to get a substantive report on why what exactly happened, resulting in the undue delay, then that can be provided. But in essence, in the attempts or efforts to comply with the Act, there was a debate that took place involving JIGS itself and also the department relating to what needs to be included in a bill that seeks to amend the Correctional Services Act in order to comply with the constitutional judgment. The other view was that let us come up with a JIGS bill that is not only going to amend the relevant section in the Correctional Services Act, but also to give a comprehensive account of how JIGS, now that its independence has been assured by the Constitutional Court, is going to exercise that independence. So I was saying, we eventually came to the decision that let's separate these two efforts by first amending the Correctional Services Act in accordance with the directive of the Constitutional Court, and at the same time work on coming up with a JIGS bill, which, as I say, is going to give its which is going to facilitate the exercise of that independence by JIGS in terms of its operation. So, but then at the same time there was the question of the involvement of Treasury, because there was again a debate, I think, emanating among other things, the recommendations that were made about amalgamating some of these Chapter 9 institutions that are aimed at promoting the human rights of all. And that's essentially because the argument went, JIGS is intended to promote the exercise of the human rights of vulnerable members of society who are in our center. And therefore, it should also be, the JIGS could be considered to fall in, to be part of a board that would come out of the amalgamation of this Chapter 9 institution. But of course, that's an ongoing debate, which about which there's no conclusion at the moment. So that sort of delayed things. And also on the part, especially of Treasury, who were concerned about the amount of money that is expended. Of course, the matter of making JIGS a government entity, it was also a subject of debate. And as honorable members must be aware by now, it tends to be a bit difficult for departments, in spite of all efforts made by all the presidents, for departments to work in tandem with each other. They continue to work in silos. I do not know what exactly is the reason. Sometimes it's difficult to even get ministers to sit down and pay attention to what requires their final decision. So those kinds of things and others resulted in the delays that have occurred. But as I said, if there's a need for a comprehensive account of why this delay, taking the amount of years, the number of years that has been referred to, we can provide that information. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DM. All right, I think maybe I'll just ask if the Judicial Inspectorate wants to perhaps make a comment. There wasn't any specific question to yourself if you wish to just make a comment, please do so. And then I would then go on to Ms. Lewis, our legal advisor. Judge Cameron.
Many thanks, Madam Chair. I simply to endorse everything that Mr. Van Beek and the Honourable Deputy Minister has said. When we applied to the Constitutional Court last year, when the department, at the instance of the committee, the Justice Portfolio Committee in your partner house, applied for a year's extension, we put in an affidavit of support in which we basically blamed Treasury. We needed funds, and we needed to clarify the position of our head as accounting officer. Now, we've made progress on the funding of JICS, and the bill before you does encapsulate the position of the JICS CEO as accounting officer. But really, it was that wrangle. The committee isn't concerned with it now, but we thought the whole suggestion of a sort of superstructure to manage and to account for and to administer every single quasi-autonomous or autonomous government entity was a monstrously bad idea. So that's what took a long time. But thank you for giving me this chance, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Jeff Cameron. I think you also add to clarify some of the issues. Ms. Lutz, Barbara, any comment, especially with regard to, as a committee, we like to amend legislation and send it back to the NA. But yeah, if ever we're in that situation with this ball, and the Constitutional Court deadlines that quickly. Any comments on that?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Chair, in the event that the committee would like to make amendments, we'll have to, from Parliament's side, do another application for extension to the Constitutional Court. As Judge Cameron has mentioned, the previous extension was driven by the department at the request of the Portfolio Committee because the bill was at that stage not yet officially tabled in Parliament. But now if the bill is here, and Parliament is running with it, if at this stage Parliament would require extra time for the committee to consider amendments. If it so wished, we would have to, from Parliament's side, apply quite quickly to the Constitutional Court to get that in. With that application, there's also then no guarantee that the extension will be granted. That is a risk we run. But the option is there to apply for an extension. From our officer's side, I can perhaps just also echo what Judge Cameron and my colleagues in the department has said. This bill is regarded as an interim measure, and as far as we can see from the content of the bill, it does meet the requirements of the Constitutional Court's order in Sonke. Yes, there is other things that will come into consideration when the full JICS bill is fleshed out, but from our officer's side, we are quite satisfied that the bill meets as a standard that is required to meet this deadline. But it is always the prerogative of Parliament and the committee to as legislators, to amend if it deems fit. Thank you, Chair.
Now, thank you very much, Barbara, as well for that input. I think our members, this is just the start of our process in terms of dealing with this bill. Let me thank the Deputy Minister, the Judicial Inspectorate, as well as the Department officials and our legal services for the presentation and responses to our concerns. And obviously, we will proceed to call for public comments on the bill, and thereafter, the committee will deliberate further on this bill. That being said, thank you, DM, and your team and the Judicial Inspectorate. We're actually going to move on to our second agenda item. It doesn't necessarily require yourself, so you're welcome to leave the platform if you may wish.
Thank you very much, President, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Honourable Members.
Okay, thank you very much. Honourable Members, we'll then move on to the second agenda. Amendment Bill. This is a Section 75 Bill, which was referred to the committee on the 19th of September 2023. It provides for amendments to 19 different acts administered by the Department of Justice and constitutional development. And the proposed amendments are intended to address practical and technical issues of a non-contentious nature. The deputy minister should be on the platform. Maybe let me hand over then to the deputy minister for justice to then take us through this talk.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. No, as a judicial matters bill, amendments bill is an amendment to a number of different laws. It's usually issues that are not technical and not controversial. And this bill is largely in keeping with that. The officials will go through a presentation on the bill. In the National Assembly, I think it was supported by all parties except the EFF, who I think said they didn't like omnibus bills. But I don't recall a specific objection to any particular provision. The types of things in the bill are, for example, there is a offence created in the Domestic Violence Act for making a false declaration. And that is basically that's all it is. It's a crime to make a false declaration when you're making an application for a domestic violence order. That is basically to allow people to make applications for a domestic violence order without having to make an affidavit and go to a police station or find a commissioner of oaths. So those are the kinds of things. There's provisions on expungement, widening the crimes for which records can be expunged, or pretty soon. The one is the state of disaster regulations and admission of guilt fines paid for violating those regulations. Another is more generally relating to admission of guilt. So it is technical. It is a number of sections. Some of them that you will see relating to some of the issues with the Master's Office are pretty technical, but most of them do have some meaning and some real impact on the lives of people that are affected by them. So, Chair, if I can hand over to DDG Pillay, who is leading the team from Legislative Development that is here to present on the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. Ms. Pillay?
Good day, Chairperson and honourable members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to brief the committee. Mr. Sibela Mecha, the Chief Director, Legislative Development, will take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. If I may request to be assisted with the presentation, I'm using a cell phone. My laptop's audio is not enough to be heard on my side. So if I may please be assisted with that. Thank you. As indicated, I'll just go to the third slide, just to indicate the summary of the bill and the purpose for which the bill seeks to achieve. As indicated, it amends various acts which we administer the Department of Justice and Control Development, and they are largely in the technical and of non-contentious nature. The bill overall contains about 35 clauses, which we'll discuss in the next slides. The clause one amends section 51 of the Mrs. Court to empower the court to subpoena the court manager of that court whenever it requires information to pertaining to an infrastructure-related or operational matter that would have arisen at that court. Similar to that is Clause 11, which amends Section 342A of the Criminal Procedure Act for the same purpose relating to issues pertaining to infrastructure-related and operational matters. Then Clause 2 deletes the proviso, which is in Section 93 Ter 1B of the Mrs. Court Act as recommended by the Regional Court Process Forum, as this results in long delays as a result of not being able to find assessors. Clause 3 amends Section 28 of the Administration of Estates Act in order to remove reference to check accounts that is no longer used in checks or orders, to allow the executor to open an appropriate account or to make e-payments, also to align with modern circumstances. That clause further requires that all payments from the estate account must be made by the executor to contain relevant information and any information that may be required or as directed by the master. Clause 4 and 5 proposes the amendments to remove reference to checks as indicated as well previously in the other clause, for and also to make a provision for an affidavit by the executor for the declaration of payment to creditors or as shares in the process of winding up an estate. Clause 6 then makes provision for the chief master to review any appointment by the master of an executor, curator, or interim curator after taking the presentations from an executor, curator, interim curator, beneficiary, or any other person the chief master may have considered relevant. Then clause 7 empowers the chief master, acting upon a request of a master or a person designated by him or her, to institute civil proceedings in pursuance of the Administration of Estates Act against an executor, tutor, curator, administrator, or interim executor or curator. Then clause 8 inserts section 96A in order to provide for the powers, the duties, and functions of the chief master. The next clause 9 then proposes amendments to section 103 to correct a technical and drafting oversight. Section 103 was amended by the Judicial Matters Amendment Act 2017 by inserting subparagraphs EA and EB. Then it transpired afterwards that the section 103 was previously amended by the Estate Affairs Amendment Act 1992, which had already inserted a paragraph EA in section 103. Then clause 10 proposes an insertion of new sections 57B, C, and D into the Criminal Procedure Act. This section 57B proposes that the minister may declare that certain category of offences do not result in previous convictions against the accused, and also provides for expungement of minor offences as well as certain offences committed in terms of the Disaster Management Act. And next slide. The proposed new section 57 seeks to provide for the expungement of criminal records of persons whose names appear in the records of the Criminal Record Center of the SAPS after having paid admission of guilt fine for offences that are envisaged in the proposed new section 57B1. Those offences will then be determined in consultation with the NDPP and after consultation with the Minister of Police. The objective of the amendment is to also provide for automatic expungement of the criminal, the said criminal record. Then clause 12 proposes to repeal section 21(2)(a) of the Material Property Act so as to comply with the Constitutional Court judgment in the Sithole and another, versus Sithole and another, which found that section 21(2)(a) to be unfairly discriminatory and not justifiable under section 36 of the Constitution, as it maintains and perpetuates the discrimination that was created by section 22(6) of the Black Administration Act of 1927. By regarding marriages of black couples entered into under the Black Administration Act before 1988 to be automatically out of community of property. And clause 13 proposes amendments to section 11 of the Sheriff's Act in order to extend the duration of the term of office of members of the board for sheriffs. Clause 14 proposes an amendment to section 1 of the Interstate Taxation Act of 1987 in order to align the section with the judgment in Janya versus the Master of the High Court. And the court ruled in the case that the omission of a surviving life partner from benefiting in terms of the same act is invalid and unconstitutional. Here, these are the life partners who have undertook to support each other. Clause 15 then amend section 1 of the Maintenance of Surviving Spouses Act, which is consequent to Constitutional Court judgment in Janya versus Master of the High Court. The court that rules that the definition of survivor should be amended to include all parties for purposes of benefiting the surviving partner when the estate is wound up. Then clause 16 amends section 34 of the NPA Act in order to align the due dates of annual reports that must be submitted to the National Director of Public Prosecutions. Clause 17 amends section 35 of the NPA Act in order to change the date envisaged in section 35(2) on which the NDPP must submit to the Minister the annual report to align with section 40 of the Public Finance Management Act of 1999. Then clause 18 amends section 3 of the Debt Collectors Act of 1998 in order to increase the term of office of members of the council for debt collectors and to provide that such a member is eligible for reappointment. Then clause 19 seeks to amend the Domestic Violence Act so as to penalize the making of a false declaration. Currently, the declaration is made under affidavit, but then with the electronic systems that are to be used, the making of an affidavit may delay the process, so then making a declaration is then going to be penalized if someone makes a declaration with false information. At clause 20 seeks to amend section 10 of the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination PEPFUDA in order to comply with the Constitutional Court judgment of Tswelane versus South African Human Rights Commission and another. Then clause 21 seeks to effect an amendment to section 10(1)(a) of the Protected Disclosures Act of 2000 to include more bodies such as the South African Human Rights Commission, the Commission for Gender Equality, the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities, and the Public Service Commission, to which a protected disclosure may be made. Currently, the reference is only to the Public Protector and the Auditor General. Then clause 22 seeks to insert a new subsection 3 in section 13 of the Judges Remuneration and Conditions of Employment Act in order to allow the adjustment of certain amounts by notice in the Gazette. Clause 23 then inserts section 34A after the section 34 of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities to provide for the failure of persons or entities to prevent bribery as recommended by the Judicial Commission of Inquiry into allegations of state capture, corruption, and fraud. And clause 24 amends section 29, 3, and 4 of the Sexual Offences Act to clarify that the Director General of Health is responsible for the distribution of notices contemplated in section 29, 3, and that the Director General of Justice and Constitutional Development will be responsible to distribute the notices that are contemplated in also in section 29, 3. Then clause 25 amends section 40 of the Sexual Offences Act to delete a reference to the repealed section 24B of the Freedom and Publications Act of 1996. And section 24B of the Freedom and Publications Act was repealed by the Cybercrime Act of 2020. Then clause 26 amends section 55A of the Sexual Offences Act in order to align the practical considerations to the legal position. Then clause 27 amends.
Sorry, Mr. Sebele Mecha. Can I just come quickly in there? Section 55A allows the minister to designate sexual offences courts, which has been happening. However, in terms of the definition of a regional court, which is where most of all the sexual offences courts are, he can only designate, there's only one regional court per province. And he can only designate, the entire regional court, which is sort of self-defeating in terms of what was meant with specific places of sitting to be designated as having sexual offences courts, where then the public can expect a particular standard of services. So it all sounds very technical, but it's very important in terms of allowing the minister then in terms of 55A to designate places of sitting in the regional courts as sexual offences courts. Thanks. Sorry, Mr. Sebele Mecha.
Thank you, TM. Then if I may proceed, clause 27 then amends section 66 of the Sexual Offences Act in order to regulate the confidentiality and destruction of child pornography. Then clause 28 amends section 17 of the Superior Courts Act which deals with the leave to appeal in order to revise the reason for referral of the matter by the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal for a reconsideration to be in the circumstances where a grave failure or injustice would otherwise result, or the administration of justice may be brought into disrepute instead of the current provision that simply says for exceptional circumstances. And Clause 29 substitutes Section 18(4) of the Superior Courts to clarify the meaning of the phrase next highest court in relation to an automatic right of appeal granted to an aggrieved party to the legal proceedings to mean that a full court of that division, if the appeal is against the decision of a single judge of the division, or to mean the Supreme Court of Appeal if the appeal is against the decision of two judges or the full court of the division. Then Clause 30 seeks to amend Section 15 of the South African Human Rights Commission, which regulates the powers of the South African Human Rights Commission during its investigations. There is a qualification in Section 52(b)(1) that the order must be issued in consultation with the DPP, whose jurisdiction is not provided for in the legislation of other Chapter 9 institutions. Then in view of the aforesaid statement, in view of then the removal or the qualification is then removed so that the Human Rights Commission can then issue the subpoenas on their own. Then in view of the aforementioned statement, Clause 31 proposes the removal of this qualification. Then the Clause 31 proposes an amendment to Section 664 of the Legal Aid South Africa Act to replace the system of nominations with a call for individuals to apply to serve as board members. The consequence of a call for nomination is a cumbersome process. Clause 32 then proposes amendments to Section 172 of the Legal Aid South Africa Act in order to substitute some obsolete references. And then Clause 33 corrects a reference error in Article 17(a)(2) of the Schedule of the International Arbitration Act of 2017. Then Clause 34(1) seeks to repeal the common law relating to the crime of defamation. And then Clause 34(2) is just a restatement that the repeal of the common law relating to the crime of defamation does not affect civil liability. And lastly, Clause 35 is a short title and commencement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sibelebecha. And thank you very much, DM, for the presentation. Our members, are there any questions for clarity? Maybe I should just mention to make two comments as well, in terms of your slide 10, we know that many people have struggled with expungement of criminal records. And I think we welcome this insertion, which will provide for automatic expungement of criminal records. And I think on your slide 16, where you deal with the amendments to PAPUDA, I think we should also welcome that, particularly in light of our current deliberations in terms of the hate crimes, hate speech law. Honourable Bartlett, I see one hand. Honourable Bartlett, perhaps a question from yourself.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, if I may, I don't want to switch my video on because I've experienced problems with my iPad. But I just have two questions, Honourable Chairperson. Am I audible enough?
Yes, please continue.
Okay. Chair, my first question is on the provision in Clause 35(2). It's not clear. Does it mean Clause 9 of the bill comes into operation on a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette? Or will Section 103 of the Administration of Deceased Estates Act, as amended by the bill, come into operation by a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette? And then lastly, Honourable Chairperson, when does the rest of the bill come into operation? I thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning to the Honourable Member. Sorry.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable Bartlett. Honourable De Dovo.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Let me also request your permission that I switch off my video. This load shedding is killing all of us. Honourable Chair, firstly, let us welcome the the presentation. I think the laws that are there to be amended are quite critical. Judicial matters that needs to be attended to and very, very important in a sense that it requires us to fast track those particular bills to finalize them. Now, Chair, I have a general concern about this laws. You're looking at this laws, and this concern I'm raising, I've raised it in the past. You look at these laws, all of them, the Magistrate Court Act of 1944, the Administration of Estates of 1965, the Criminal Procedures Act of 1977. Now, the concern that I have is, why don't we properly amend this laws? I raised this question in the engagement with the South African Law Review Commission in respect of the problems I find in respect of these laws, because the language, the context, the background in which they came about, it's not compatible in my respective view. It's not compatible with the current ethos, values, principles, and all of those that are encapsulated in the Constitution. For me, this is a bit of a problem, and I've not received that response properly. Maybe in this meeting, just as a way, it will come up that why don't we just properly align these pieces of legislation to be compatible with the current ethos, as I've explained. Just even the language, it is not consistent. I've looked at that. For example, there is a law here that still talks about the auditor, the attorney general. And then the attorney general is the director of public prosecution today. And I don't know why don't we do that. And I sincerely request that this must be looked at, or a proper, reasonable, explainable explanation must be forwarded in terms of all of this. These laws are old, 1944, more than 80 years old, and it is still using that language that was used at the time. And it is totally incongruent, in my view, with the current constitutional dispensation, if I may say that. Secondly, Chair, we are looking at amending certain sections of these laws. Let me just make an example. The Criminal Procedures Act, in relation to the expungement of criminal records, it is a problem for me. Let me make an example. 10 years ago, I was arrested. And when you are arrested, you've got to disclose all your criminal records. I stated that I don't have a criminal record, only to find that the state was opposing my bail application on the basis of the fact that I was arrested in 1986 when I was only 15 years. In 1986, and that record was not expunged. I was arrested because of the political reasons, and at that point, I was very young, I was a minor, and that I was charged with trespass, because we were defying the laws of apartheid. I had forgotten about that. I didn't know about that. I only found about it in 2013 when I got to court, because I said, no, I don't have any criminal record whatsoever. That thing was still there, and I checked it some 3 years ago. It is still there. I have a criminal record, as it stands now, Honorable Chair, that I trespassed the apartheid laws in 1986. For me, this is unacceptable. This is really, really unacceptable. And I'm happy about this, but we need to expedite this and align them with the current values, principles, and everything of today. And we can't keep people at ransom because of these particular things. For me, this is what must be attended to very urgently, Honorable Chairperson. Secondly, and maybe the last one, it is in respect of the Criminal Record Center. I know that the whole intention here is to capture the conviction and the sentencing of persons who are found guilty in respect of the Criminal Record Center. And this is a point that I was raising. And for me, what is lacking here, it is the accessibility of this process so that people must have access to know their criminal records if they have them. And I can tell you now, it is a battle for each and every South African if he wants access to that kind of information. And then I hope that this bill will finally address that, and the department responsible will ensure that it does, in a very confidential and proper way, it does what it should in order to ensure that whoever wants to have this information, this such an information, is accessible to those particular people. Other than that, Chairperson, this is a very, very good, comprehensive piece of legislation that has put together a whole lot of issues pertaining to judicial matters that we must really look at. And with a last view that they say dire need to educate our people with regard to these amendments, because they live this. These are their practical daily lives, and they affect them every day of their lives. And it is equally therefore important that they have them, and they can only know them if we unfold the necessary processes to educate them. Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I'll pause there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zadova. I think you raised some pertinent, important issues. Honorable Matamai.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are having a load shedding today. I just want, with your permission, just to allow me to switch off my video.
Please continue, Honorable Matama, you're allowed.
Yeah, Chairperson, I just want to raise this issue of previous conviction. I'm a prisoner and a member of parliament, as you are aware of. I've been arrested and convicted on the case of 1989. I cannot even go to Germany, lest I didn't go due to the fact that they need a letter from the correctional service. Honorable member, Tokyo Sekgwale, the former minister Tokyo Sekgwale, was arrested in UK because he has a criminal record. When are we going to cancel this thing of criminal records? Because I cannot be a member of parliament this side, I'm still a prisoner, still having a criminal record. I mean, it's a very serious problem. I mean, the crime that I committed in apartheid era. Like now, when you look to Eugene de Kock, he's carrying a gun. But myself, I cannot even apply for a gun just to protect myself. I can't do that. We are still being classified as criminals. And this said you are a member of parliament. I don't know this thing, how it is work. I just want to get the clarity there. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matamai. DM, perhaps let me hand over to you, and you also give us direction in terms of some of the questions that you can respond to. DM?
Thanks. I hope you can hear me. Look, I think the officials will just respond as well, but let me just give more of a more of the
point of order. Point of order. Can I see DM? Because I have to know him.
Outside.
Okay, I know him.
No, Honorable Matamai, the DM started in the meeting this morning and you saw him, so. Yeah, DM, please continue.
Yeah, look, just on the expungements,
We passed an amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act about 10 years ago, which provided for automatic expungement of apartheid crimes. That would be Immorality Act, all those, Separate Immunities Act, all of those. The crimes from the struggle, the TRC was meant to expunge them. And Honorable Motsamai, you know that they unfortunately didn't agree to expunge indemnify. I myself had a previous conviction for malicious injury to property for spraying graffiti on a bus station wall, and I had to get that expunged. But basically the current procedure is that if you weren't sentenced to prison, so in Honorable Dodo's case, you can easily get it expunged. The problem with the process is the Criminal Record Center is a bit concerned about automatic expungements, that the system might go wrong. So that's more broadly. In the case of Honorable Motsumai, I think what you've got to do is apply for a presidential pardon. But the whole issue with records is so that people can, particularly employers, can know when it comes to sexual offences, you're actually worse. You're going on to a sexual offenders register. That's the issue more broadly. What's happening here is expungements for admissions of guilt, which because basically people who got admission of guilt often weren't warned about the consequences of paying that admission of guilt and having fingerprints taken. And then it's specifically expungements for admission of guilt with the state of disaster regulations. But the whole issue of expungements, when we passed the amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act, we said that the minister must do a report to Parliament. It was given to the Law Reform Commission. Unfortunately, the Law Reform Commission's proposal was to say everyone must apply to court, which we didn't find practical. So that's sort of broadly on the expungement issues. On the issue of the old laws, the problem is, as members should know, making laws is very complicated. So there is a process for the revision of the Criminal Procedure Act, which the officials can give more details on that. We've got the Insolvency Act, which I think is 1930-something, and that requires still a fair amount of work, although there are various drafts. There was an amendment that was or not an amendment, a redoing of the Extradition Act, which unfortunately couldn't make it to Parliament. It was ready, but it couldn't make it to Parliament because of the pressure of other legislation. So the problem is there's a lot of justice legislation, and it is taking long to work through things. Yes, the Administration of Estates Act needs to be revised because that has it's from a different era. So let me just basically make those points, and then Chair, I will have to leave to attend the function that I spoke about. The officials will carry on with the responses, I'll join you then again from 1 o'clock, or when you start sitting again. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, DM. Over to you, Mr. Sibele Mecha.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to go back to start with the issue of the short title and commencement. The rest of the provisions, except the one referenced to in which is section 9, will come into operation as soon as the president assents to the bill, because they do not require or they do not concern any part of the regulations. But then section 9 or clause 9, which deals with section 103, is a provision that relates to the making of regulations and the changes that are happening there. So we'll need to go and realign the regulation so that they speak to the changes that have been made by the or reference to by the bill. So that is the only reason. Other than that, the rest of the provisions will come into operation because they require no regulations to be made. Then just to add the other list of the bills that we are currently looking at, which will obviously come after the then in the next administration, after the elections. The administration of estates is being reviewed. The Criminal Procedure Act as well. We have set up a project, which is a fast-track process, to review the entire Criminal Procedure Act. So the Law Reform Commission is leading that part, not on a normal project type, but the fast-track type of a process, so that this bill is drafted and ready, so that when the next administration comes, we will be ready to then proceed with it. And some of the piece of legislation, I think the Magistrates Act and the Message Code Act also are being reviewed. We had previously published for public comments, but then dealing with certain comments that require other processes before we finalize them. So all of those piece of legislation that were referenced to, we are busy working on them. Then I think the other questions were responded to by the Deputy Minister in detail, unless I've missed one of the questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sibele Mecha. I'm going to, the DM did respond to some of the issues, but due to the fact that we are just beginning the process of engagement on this bill, we will also have a lot more time to engage with yourself as well as through public comments on this bill. Perhaps honourable, let us leave it at that point for now. Let me also take this opportunity to thank the DM and yourself from the department. And obviously, in general, we would always welcome many of the clauses which would ease the administration of justice. And we will, on our side, advertise the bill for public comment, and the committee will deliberate further after receiving such comments. That said, thank you very much from the side of the department in relation to the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. Our next agenda item is in relation to, and my apologies for the camera once again. I just noticed that there's a little icon here which indicates my bandwidth. Sometimes it's a bit erratic, but anyway, if you cannot hear me, then please, indicate that. But also switching off the camera does assist with general bandwidth of a meeting as well. But on members, the next agenda item is on the hate crimes, hate speech bill. Members will recall that in our last meeting, we had a very limited time to deal with the bill, but largely dealt with the bill at a much higher level, where the department and the deputy minister highlighted the 7 key areas which were raised as concerns. And I think, as I said, at that time, we were unable to go into the more details of the public submissions. Today, we've requested the department to outline its responses to the clauses of the bill, and possibly what they are thinking is around some of the proposed amendments. I think thereafter, honourable members, we'll then go into two discussions. What I propose, honourable members, because we expected to also continue with this meeting after a lunch break, I'm going to propose that we ask the department, I think it's Mr. Dupree, you are on the platform. I see you are. Perhaps, Mr. Dupree, if you could maybe please then. Honourable Motamai?
I didn't think. Answer.
Okay. We're off that agenda item, but it's not the last time we're engaging the department on that matter. But also your issue can also be dealt with on the side as well with the deputy minister. I think we'll also take that one.
I must make it in secret with deputy.
Make it a secret? No, you wanted an answer.
Because I wanted to get an answer now.
Yes, yeah. No, Matamai, the DM had left the meeting, if you recall.
Okay, but that's why sometimes I make a lot of noise, is because I don't get answer as others get answers. So it looked like...
No, the DM didn't... I think the department didn't exhaust all the answers, but we left it in the spirit that we're still going to deal with the ball. And we're still going to engage the department on matters. Okay, I'm almost to my... We're sharing the next item. Thank you. Other members, apologies. As I've indicating that I will request maybe the department to present till Mr. Dupree, maybe till Club 4, because a lot of the matters are like kind of interrelated, especially with the definitions, Club 3 and Club 4. And then we can then engage on what is being presented. And then thereafter we'll deal with the other clauses of the ball. Mr. Dupree, if that is okay with you, I know the time now is 11:45. Gershon, just remind me in terms of the program, what time we said we take lunch, or we can take lunch anytime members you feel that you want a break, and then we can continue with the process. Unfortunately, lunch will also be virtual. Okay. Our members, let me allow Mr. Dupree to maybe start with the presentation, and then as the time goes on, maybe if you allow me, I'll use my discretion then to take a break for members to have lunch, and then we can come back and continue. Mr. Dupree.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much. Madam Chair, I'm just quickly going to see whether I'm able to share my screen. Yes. You must just excuse me, Madam Chair, where I maybe interrupt myself. I'm looking at more than one document at this moment, or I'm using more than one document. However, what we would like to point out and maybe repeat to the committee is that this document is the summary of the submissions that were received, but the summary also refers to annexures to this document, and the portion that I've highlighted to you indicate to you what those annexures entail. I did not really know what to expect from the committee time-wise, so what I have tried to do, especially with regard to the summary itself, is to highlight those submissions that we would like to bring to the attention of the committee, of course, apart from the document and what is noted there itself. So with your permission, Madam Chair, I would like to maybe just highlight a few aspects from Table 1, and Table 1 reflects comments that the department received or the committee received, which is more of a general nature. For example, the Democratic Alliance and Google is of the view that the bill is attempting to double legislate for hate crimes by taking circumstances which would ordinarily be taken into account at the sentencing stage where an underlying offense was committed. The response of the department in this regard, Madam Chair, is to indicate to the committee that the introduction of underlying offences as hate crimes, among others, enables the Criminal Record Centre to record offences as hate crimes that were committed as a result of a convicted person's prejudice towards certain persons with certain characteristics. Aggravating factors are not recorded in the criminal records. The introduction of hate crimes also sends out a very strong message that these type of offences should not be tolerated in an open and democratic society. Staying with the same submission, it was submitted that the bill poses a risk of the government using the provisions of the bill to curtail speech or actions it finds politically undesirable. The usage of existing legislation and mechanisms are a safer solution. The bill in its current form may have a chilling effect on free speech. The response here is merely to say it's not clear how a statutory offence of hate speech may become a stronger tool to curtail free expression. For example, the Films and Publications Act contains similar provisions which were recently approved by Parliament. The common law offence of crimen injuria could just as easily be employed as a political tool to stifle freedom of expression. The department does not agree with that statement. There was also quite a number of submissions made where the concern of a balance between free speech and hate speech prevention was brought to the fore. And we would like to point out, Madam Chair, that the finalization of the bill was kept in abeyance pending the Kulani judgment. It may also be mentioned that the judgment gave rise to a tightening up of some of the provisions of the bill, specifically referring then to Clause 4 of the bill itself. And so we would like to indicate that the relevant provisions of the bill have been aligned to the judgment, and that will be highlighted to the committee during the clause-by-clause analysis of the bill. Another concern that was raised by the Centre for Child Justice, the Centre for Social Justice, is that no mention of growing hate speech on internet was particularly social media and the need to control hate speech and other crimes perpetrated as cyber crimes. The submission or the response here merely is that the ambit of Clause 4 is wide enough to include those instances of hate speech that are committed in cyberspace, especially when Clause 4 is read with specific definitions that are included in Clause 1 of the bill. This is also an interesting one that we would like to highlight to the committee, and the submission was made by PACHA. They recommended that the protection from hate crimes or hate speech aimed at young people specifically should be highlighted. The question whether hate crimes or hate speech aimed at children or vulnerable persons are recognized under the Act, and our response, or the department's response, Madam Chair, is that age forms part of the definition of characteristics and not only refers to young people but also includes older persons against whom hate crimes may be committed. The categories listed in the definitions of characteristics and grounds have been identified as the most vulnerable persons in society, potentially falling victim to these crimes. And then the Films and Publications Board, among others, recommended that reference should be made in the bill to the Films and Publications Board as an enforcement statutory entity, particularly on in respect of on online platforms where hate speech is highly prevalent. The department's response is then that the ambit of the bill is much wider than the ambit of the Films and Publications Act. It is doubted whether it is feasible to include the Films and Publications Board as an enforcement entity in the bill where it has a restricted statutory mandate. The department's view is that Chapter 9 institutions are entrusted with enforcing fundamental rights irrespective
Mr. Dupree, you've muted yourself.
Yes, Madam Chair, my apologies. My voice, I I'm really not a long distance talker. So my voice goes quickly. I apologize for that. I'll just, let me just take a sip of water, please.
No problem, Mr. Dupree. When you need a break, just let us know.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that sort of highlights the main components that we would have liked to draw the attention of the committee to during this discussion. With regard to Table 2, these are the comments that were received in respect of the different provisions of the bill. And with regard to the preamble, we highlighted the response by Dr. Du Plessis, and that was a response to the select committee request or question posed to the doctor during the public hearings. The doctor recommends an amendment to the preamble by inserting reference to freedom of religious expression and by replacing advocacy of hatred that is based on the grounds mentioned there, replacing that with advocacy of national, racial or religious hatred that constitutes incitement to discrimination, hostility or violence. The department's response here, Madam Chair, is merely to say that the bill is in line with the Constitution and there's no need to amend the preamble as suggested. You will recall during the previous meeting of the committee, we indicated that the important instruments and among others also the Constitution with these relevant sections are quoted in the preamble. We, as it is, already have a very long and extensive preamble, which is nearly, I wouldn't want to say out of proportion, but it's a very long preamble if you compare the content of the bill clause-wise, the numbers of clauses. But we are of the view with the comments received and with the permission of the committee, the department will submit proposals for the amendment of the bill. This is one of them with regard to Clause 1. The Western Cape government indicated that in subclause E, the term asylum seekers and is used. Now that is one of the, or that's the definition of characteristics, as well as, if I remember correctly, grounds. So they argue that the term asylum seeker is used to denote a ground, but the term is incorrectly used and should be asylum seeker status, a ground on which the offense of hate speech is based. The department agrees with this proposal, and an amendment will be proposed to the select committee for consideration. Lombard Forensic Accountants, they do not support the bill in toto. They argue that hate is not defined. In its current form, it could be used for political reasons to silence outspoken persons. Now, Madam Chair, the two definitions or terms that attracted the most criticism is, of course, the definition of hate and then also the definition of harm. But in response to Lombard Forensic Accountants, the department indicates that, once again, it's not clear how a statutory offense of hate speech may become a tool to curtail freedom of expression. And we once again then refer to the Films and Publications Act, which was approved by Parliament, the amendments thereto recently. Accidentally, those amendments came into operation on the 1st of March last year. But we would also like to indicate
Mr.
Dupre,
I'm not sure if it's just myself, but I missed bits of what you're saying. Gershon, can you confirm if that is the case on honourable members?
All of us, we didn't hear that.
Yeah, no, there's a bit of what, yeah, that way we don't hear you at all. And then you just emerge what you're saying. So I'm not sure if maybe you can try and maybe, and I know you say you're referring to different documents, but perhaps if you could just try and speak more clearly in the mic or whatever, because yeah,
Madam
we Chair, do disappear a bit. Yeah.
Madam Chair, it's actually a trick, and I'll be able to teach it to anyone to pretend that you've got an unstable internet connection, but no, I apologize, Madam Chair. I do have, I am experiencing an unstable internet connection. So if it happens again, please just stop me immediately. So I am now with 4SA, and I'm just working from this document, Madam Chair, but I am using other reference documents as well. So that's why I'm saying, but for my own purposes, for purposes of the presentation itself, but for the committee's sake, this document is then the important one. And I'm only working from this or speaking to this document only. This is a important comment that was also received, and many of the commentators nearly said exactly the same thing, and apparently they agree with each other, but they argue that the bill's definition of harm contains elements that are open to subjective assessment. The response of the department, and we would be able to indicate that to the committee when the committee look at the bill itself, the definition of harm was amended in the portfolio committee on the basis of the comments that were received by that committee, portfolio committee, calling for a stricter definition to be included in the bill, among others to clarify that harm must be objectively determined and not with reference to the subjective considerations of the individual concerned. And we will point them out to you. Those words are expressly mentioned in the definition itself. Madam Chair, please allow me just 2 minutes. I just need to get some water. I apologize for this.
Okay, no problem. Okay. Members, you can have just a leg stretcher. If you are sitting.
Madam Chair, apologies. I really feel embarrassed about my voice letting me down. Then there's also the comments by 4SA to say that harm should be defined as, and the proposed wording is then there, how they feel that harm should be defined. The response by the department is to say that to limit the definition of harm to psychological or physical harm will not suffice for purposes of hate speech. Even the common law recognizes that emotional distress, negatively affecting one's dignity, in other words, of a victim, is sufficient to constitute an offense. for example, then the offence of crimina injuria. They also propose that hatred should be defined. This is also something that the department will come back to when the committee considers the bill clause by clause, but you will recall at the previous meeting of the committee, the department did highlight from, if I remember correctly, our annexure B, that it is near to impossible to define the term or the definition of hatred, which will be 100% in line with the circumstances of any country. Then, once again, Dr. Du Plessis responded to a request that was made in the Select Committee during the public hearings. Dr. Du Plessis recommends that the definition of harm should be deleted. The term harm is a subjective concept, and disproportionately broadens the allowed scope of the limitations to freedom of expression as reflected in international human rights law. This is where the department will also then come back when we look at the definition of harm. We refer the committee to annexure C, and we just merely summarize here to say that there is no universal definition of the terms hate, hatred, and harm. Different jurisdictions have enacted legislation within their own context. Then, the Hate Crimes Working Group and for SA recommends that associates should be defined as family members, colleagues, friends, and other possible connections to a victim. The provisions of the bill will be easier to read as a catch-all phrase in place of listing all possible personal connections to victims in the relevant sections. Now, Madam Chair, we would like to point out to you that the definition of victim does not refer to a family member or an associate. The only reference in the bill to associate is in Clause 3.1b, and it is used in the context of the victim's association with or support of a group of persons. Madam Chair, I apologize.
You can take a moment, Mr. Dupert. Honorable Dodovo, maybe you can also mute yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for understanding. Madam Chair, and I'm not going to repeat this because we have pointed that out to the committee at the previous meeting, but there are also a number of submissions that have been made where concern is expressed with regard to the fact that certain terms are not defined in the bill itself, and we have in general indicated to the committee that the legislature is free to expand on or detract from the ordinary dictionary meanings of words. In this regard, the recommendation is that the word harm should be restricted to physical harm. But we argue that it should also be kept in mind that the definition of harm should not be read in isolation without any reference to the provisions of Clause 4, which clause has been amended in the PC to be in line with the judgment of in the Quilani matter. staying with the same Association of Christian Media, they argue that the bill criminalizes hate speech in Clause 4.1, but fails to define it. This leaves open to abuse the risk that anyone who feels offended by a statement may frame it as hatred. ADF International also agreed with that statement. Now, we would like to point out that subclause 1 describes or defines in clause 4 when an offense of hate speech will be committed. A victim who feels offended is not sufficient to establish criminal liability. Liability will have to be determined according to objective criteria, and that is very important. The next one is an interesting one, where the commentator feels that if sexual orientation is included in the list of grounds, then it needs to be narrowly defined to prevent scope creep. The purpose is to avoid other sexual behaviors, such as pedophilia, etc., to fall within the ambit of that definition. The department's response is that, well, the department does not agree that the provisions of the bill could be used to protect all persons with extreme forms of sexual orientation, some of which, such as pedophilia and incest, may qualify as criminal behavior.
Chair, may I request that Alison Botha take us through parts of the document when Mr. Dupria is just needs a few minutes. Alison, can you come in?
Thanks, Chair. If Mr. Dupria can continue to flag the document, I'll just talk through the issues that have been highlighted. The ACDP calls for justice, and the Sunni Ulama Council Gauteng recommend that the definition of grounds should be limited to those mentioned under Section 16.2 of the Constitution. The department has offered views that it's been recognized in the Kwanana judgment that analogous grounds may justifiably be included in a provision dealing with hate speech. MMA, Google, the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office, suggests that the inclusion of political affiliation or conviction as a category could result in powerful political groupings or professional politicians seeking protection against fair criticism under this provision. And they recommend that political affiliation or conviction as a category be removed. The department's offer view that political affiliation or conviction as a ground for hate speech was removed from the bill and does not form part of Clause 4 of the bill. The Aurum Institute suggests that the bill is not clear and does not mention or categorise corrective rape. The question that needs to be raised at this point is whether the South African legal framework adequately addresses the scourge of corrective rape in the light of the aims of transformative constitutionalism. The department's offer view that the definition of characteristics covers persons who are regarded as vulnerable persons, and the ambit of the definition is therefore wide enough to include instances of corrective rape. Google suggests that including a definition of intersex will restrict the definition to a meaning that may evolve over time as scientific and societal understanding of what it means to be intersex changes. So the definition of intersex should be deleted from the bill. And the department has said that the definition was deleted in the PC. The Western Cape government have recommended that a qualification in relation to the victim in clause 3 now is necessary in this clause. And it appears that the victim's association or support is limited to a group of persons rather than the broader category of association with a person or a group exhibiting the characteristics that are subjective of the prejudice or intolerance. And they recommend that the wording must refer to the victim's family member, the victim's association with the support for a person or a group of persons who share the said characteristics. The department agrees, and we will propose an amendment to the committee. The Center for Social Justice have said that considering over the years, over the past years that xenophobic violence has erupted in South African communities, it should be explicitly listed as an offence under hate crimes. The argument for not listing it could be that it is captured under ethnic and social origin, but due to its recurring nature and the prejudices within communities that warrant its explicit inclusion as a characteristic. The department have said that xenophobic violence is a generic term that's used to refer to acts of violence being committed against persons who, for example, have different nationalities than the perpetrators of the violence. And the term xenophobic is not, strictly speaking, a characteristic, but nationality is regarded as a characteristic in terms of the bill. And we submit that the definition of characteristics is wide enough to encompass all forms of xenophobic violence. The Hate Crimes Working Group proposed the following amendment in sub 4, which is where the Director of Public Prosecutions or a person delegated by them declines to prosecute a charge of hate crime. Written reasons for this decision must be provided to the complainant or their associates within 3 working days. And a definition of working day should then be included in clause 1 as referring to any day other than a Saturday, Sunday, or public holiday. And the department is of the view that the policy directives of the NPA are sufficient in this regard. And those policy directives, among others, deal with the provision of reasons. Prosecutors are often requested by complainants or family members of deceased persons, accused persons, or legal representatives to furnish reasons for the exercise of their prosecutorial discretion, especially where that decision was not to institute criminal proceedings. Only requests emanating from persons with a legitimate interest in the matter should be entertained. And in the interest of transparency and accountability and in accordance with Section 33 of the Constitution, reasons should as a rule be given upon request, and the nature and detail of the reasons will depend on the circumstances of each case. Same Love Toti, in the Select Committee addressed the questions of what is the definition of hate, and their response was that the bill does not criminalize hate because hate is an emotion. A hate crime amounts to the commission of a recognized offense which is committed with a specific motive. Motive is a common denominator in every crime and forms part of investigations by the police. And the department notes that response by Same Love Toti.
Madam Chair, if I may interrupt here, if I remember correctly, when you introduced us, I think you indicated that you would want the department maybe to pause at clause 4. I don't know whether you want us to proceed. If we could get some guidance, please.
Okay, I wanted you to deal with clause 4 and then pause. But because I think the bulk of the issues are within these clauses, even your documentation. But maybe on a member's passage, we can run through I think the clause 4 is quite bulky, right? If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Dupre. Perhaps take us through clause 4 and then we can take a break from at that point and see if the time as well as whether members have any questions for clarity or if they want to engage on some of the issues. Perhaps you just take us through clause 4 as well and then we can move forward.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, once again, we followed the same formula, and you are correct. The bulk of the comments that were received related to clause 4. However, they are there noted in the document itself. We once again would like to highlight a few of them that may not have been repeated by other institutions. For example, Ilalita Lavantu said that it is challenging to draw a clear line between hateful speech and protected expression given the fact that it is a subjective and context-dependent test. The country is very diverse in terms of culture, religion, politics, race, which therefore needs a balance to safeguard the limitations placed under hate speech. The department's response is that Clause 4 was carefully redrafted, Madam Chair, with the judgment, among others, then of Kulani in mind, and the need to strike a balance between competing rights, such as the right to dignity and freedom of expression. The test to determine whether a person is guilty of hate speech remains an objective and not a subjective test. And Madam Chair, the department maybe would like to highlight the fact that, and this is also something that came out strongly in the portfolio committee, is that yes, freedom of expression is very important, but equally important is the dignity of others, and a balance should be struck between those two competing rights, if I may call them that in this context. And then POR SA, for example, recommends defining hate speech to expressly exclude private communications, and they recommend that the following should be included in that clause, and that is any person who intentionally publicly publishes, propagates, or advocates anything or communicates to one or more persons in a manner, of course, to incite harm and to promote, propagate hatred based on one or more of the grounds, is guilty of the offense of hate speech. Google also agreed with this approach or recommendation. The department's response is that it's not necessary to expressly exclude private conversations. The Constitutional Court expressly stated in the Kulani judgment that a disjunctive reading of Papuda would, among others, include private conversations, which should not be the case. I don't think it is, I think we won't add anything more at this stage. I think it is something that will be discussed during a consideration of the clause. Then the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office, among others, said that clause 41A Roman 1, refers to communications that have a clear intention to be harmful or to incite harm. In turn, harm is defined in Clause 1 as any emotional, psychological, physical, social, or economic harm. The word any in this definition indicates that even very minor or trivial degrees of harm would qualify as hate speech. This is also something that is also of a recurring nature by many of the commentators, that the concern has once again, as in the portfolio committee, been expressed that subjective tests will be applied and that matters may be trivialized, or the offense may be trivialized. The department does not agree, because the test to determine whether harm is an element of the offense, whether it's present or not, is an objective test and not a subjective test. Then the Association of Muslim Advocates and Lawyers indicated that clauses 4 and 1 lack clarity in defining specific types of conduct that would be considered as good faith. Since the statute pertains to the criminal law, it is crucial to have precise and well-defined crisp concepts within the law. The department is of the view that it's not necessary to specify types of conduct that will qualify as good faith conduct. To do so may lead to unintended consequences, that instances of good faith conduct may not be mentioned, that may lead to liability in circumstances where it is not justified. Whether a person has acted in good faith or not is a factual question that must be evaluated on a case-by-case basis by the courts. Google indicated that Clause 4.2d, which exempts good faith interpretations of religious texts from being considered as hate speech, is overly broad, they recommend the deletion of Clause 4.2d, They argue that the broad drafting could potentially enable religious scholars and leaders to advocate for hate speech under the umbrella of such speech made in good faith interpretations. We do not agree, Madam Chair. Clause 4.2d is subject to the qualifier that the speech may not advocate hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm. Then this is also something that has been mentioned by many commentators, is that Section 16.1 of the Constitution provides that everyone has the right to freedom of expression, which includes, among others, academic freedom and freedom of scientific research. The inclusion of bona fide in Clause 4.2a is more restrictive than the requirement of Section 16.1. The argument of the department is that Section 16 of the Constitution does not prevent or prohibit the legislature from adding any qualifying criteria in Clause 4.2. The Ecumenical Leadership Council, they argue that the issue of hate speech is more contentious due to the potential that the proposed legislation may have on the fundamental right to free expression. Religious leaders will have to cross a potentially combustible minefield in order to preach the gospel. How do religious leaders preach a biblical scripture that says homosexuality is an abomination without being labeled as hate speech and may be facing criminal charges? The department argues that Clause 4.1a, Roman 1 and 2 must be read conjunctively and not disjunctively. The example that has been used is an oversimplification of the provisions of that sub-clause, because the second and very important requirement for criminal liability is that the speech must be uttered with the intention to promote or propagate hatred. Madam Chair, with your permission, I'm going to pass the ball temporarily to my colleague again, Ms. Puerta.
Thanks, Henk. We'll go down to the We Are Tomorrow Global Partnership. And they express the view that the bill should explicitly include provisions for the regulation of hate speech on social media and other online platforms. This can be done by expanding the definition of public space to include online spaces and by requiring online platforms to take action against hate speech that is posted on their platforms. Second, they recommend that the bill should recognize the intersectionality of different forms of discrimination. The bill should explicitly provide protection against hate crimes and hate speech that are motivated by a combination of factors such as race, gender, and sexuality. The department is of the view that the provisions of Clause 4.1, read with the definition of communicate, are wide enough to include online platforms, and there's no need to provide expressly for online platforms. Second, the department's of the view that it's not necessary to mention intersectionality specifically. Apart from the fact that it is implied, it should be kept in mind that liability in terms of Clause 4 only requires a minimum of one ground to be present. However, the expression one or more of the grounds will cater for the concerns on intersectionality. The ACDP have recommended that it's easier to be convicted of hate speech than the civil offence of hate speech. The Concord's definition in the Quilani judgment deals with purpura in a civil law context. The bill is a criminal law, which needs to have a far narrower definition of hate speech, as well as a higher threshold to meet the requirements of hate speech as an offence, as opposed to purpura's civil offence of hate speech. The bill creates a situation where it's easier to go to jail for 8 years for hate speech than to be ordered to apologize under purpura. They also recommend that the words be harmful be deleted to bring it in line with Section 16.2 of the Constitution. The department is of the view that the bill is in line with the Quilani judgment, and most notably that the conjunctive reading of Clause 4, 1a, Roman 1, and Roman 2. And it should be kept in mind that the burden of proof in criminal matters is much higher than compared to the burden in civil matters. And the burden of proof should be regarded as the distinguishing factor when the two provisions are compared with each other. Also, this matter was debated at length in the Portfolio Committee, and it was finally decided to retain harmful, among others, because it stands to reason that certain forms of hate speech are inevitably harmful to certain persons, and they therefore deserve protection. FSU have recommended that the bill is effectively codifying Syria for four items listed in section 16(1)(a) to D of the Constitution. It's also codified section 15, which deals with freedom of religion. The error is that section 16(1) refers to a general right to freedom of expression, which includes freedom of the press and other media, freedom of artistic creativity and academic freedom, and freedom of scientific research. The bill's codification of the aforementioned is misguided to the extent that section 16(1) lists were not intended to be an exhaustive list. The department disagrees with that. The bill does not codify what is already in the Constitution because the word includes in section 61 indicates that that list is not exhaustive, which means that other analogous grounds may be added in future as and when the need arises. The right to receive and impart information or ideas is very wide or broad and was therefore not included in the subclause. MMA have suggested that the bill should strike an appropriate balance between freedom of expression and the protection of human dignity and equality. The bill should prevent hate speech that subverts the dignity and self-worth of human beings, and the department notes that comment. ADF International have suggested that law enforcement agencies will face difficulties in identifying whether there's sufficient evidence to prosecute hate speech that aggravates many base crimes, such as assault and harassment, is often verbally communicated, and therefore the evidence relies on the hearer or the receiver being able to accurately recollect the event. The evidence base can therefore be very thin and anecdotal. The department's of the view that the presence or absence of evidence is one of the many factors to be taken into account by the prosecuting authority before they make a decision on whether or not to institute a prosecution. It's not a factor that should be addressed by way of legislation. CFE have recommended that the current wording of the bill criminalizes conduct far beyond what's suggested in international documents. Accordingly, there's no rational relationship between the stated purpose of limiting freedom of speech to comply with South Africa's obligations and undertakings and the means used to achieve that purpose. They also recommend that the language of the bill should make it clear that only intention in the form of dolus directus, which is direct intention, rather than dolus indirectus or dolus eventualis will suffice. Further, that the exceptions in clause 4.2 don't make provision for satire and parody, and they therefore recommend that comedic expression, alternatively satire and parody, ought to be included expressly in the language of clause 4.2. The inclusion will be consistent with clause 12, cap A 5 of the Copyright Amendment Bill, which insulates parody, satire, caricature, and cartoon from attracting liability for copyright infringement. The department's of the view that the test to determine a clear intention is, in the end, after the consideration of all relevant factors, an objective test. Concord in the recent Seat of Child Law versus EDP case confirmed that the supreme law in the country is the Constitution and not international documents. The courts are bound first and foremost by the Constitution. The legislature should be cautious when legislating on common law principles of criminal liability, which has been formulated over a very long time, and this could result in unintended consequences. Dolus remains what it is, irrespective of the form which it takes. Clause 42A refers to artistic creativity, performance, or expression, and it's admitted that the ambit of Clause 42A is wide enough to cover or include comedic expression, including satire and parody. And the risk of expanding that list is that some group of persons may be left out. For example, what will be the position of musicians, singers, and poets who are not listed? The Human Rights Commission recommends that the bill stipulate that the criminal route would be reserved for egregious or serious crimes, serious cases rather, which ought to be proven beyond reasonable doubt. Less serious cases must be addressed through PAPUDA. The department is of the view that a provision of that nature is inappropriate. An aggrieved person should be afforded the opportunity to decide whether they want to follow the civil PAPUDA route or the criminal hate speech route, or both. Same left Toti in addressing questions by the select committee. The question was, should the bill reflect the findings in the Kwilana judgment? And same left Toti's response was, yes, that it should. Subparagraphs 1 and 2, subclause 1, should, in line with the Kwilana judgment, be read conjunctively as currently reflected in the bill. It narrows the scope of the definition of hate speech, and the department notes same left Toti's response. We have reached the end of the comments on clause 4G.
Thank you very much to the department for that presentation. Our members, perhaps your guidance at this point. It's 12:30. Do you want to take a break, number one? Or if you wish to, you would want to ask any questions for clarity and the comments that you would want to make based on what has been presented thus far. Well, the third thing is that there's still about 6 pages left of presentation. Perhaps if you wish or you feel that you would want to maybe finish the document and then take a break for lunch and thereafter start engaging on the document if you have any issues that you would want to raise. Perhaps your guidance at this point, or members, initially I requested the presentation till the end of clause 4 because a lot of the issues are quite interrelated with regard to the definitions and the offences that are outlined in the poll. Any comment from honourable members? Okay. I must see any comment, any input from yourself whether we should what we should do. Perhaps can I just use my discretion then, or members? I think given that I know the other clauses, there aren't that many comments. Perhaps let's allow the department then to just finish the document. I'm sure then by one we can take a break, and then we can come back and then continue with engagement on the presentations. Mr. Dupre, you probably want a break, but please, perhaps I think in the next half an hour you could finish or less.
I think so, madam.
You've got 6 pages, the way I see it.
Well, I'm halfway through the document itself, Madam Chair, but I'm quite sure that we will make 1 o'clock. With regard to clause 5, and that deals with the victim impact statement, the Centre for Social Justice argue that organizations that work in communities on issues related to violence and its prevention should be recognized as having the ability to assist victims in preparation of their statements on crimes of hate, including hate speech. A failure to recognize this gap has the potential of victims slipping through the cracks of non-redress for offenses committed against them. It is submitted that the discretion to address the court on sentencing should remain with the prosecution. However, Madam Chair, nothing prevents a prosecutor from consulting with organizations that will be able to assist the prosecution in addressing the court on sentencing. Then the South African Jewish Board of Directors agrees with the inclusion of a victim impact statement, but recommends the inclusion of a community impact statement. They argue that in the UK it is described as a short document illustrating the concerns and priorities of a specific community over a set period of time. The proposal is not supported by the department. It is trite that a presiding officer should take the interests of the victim, the convicted person, and the community at large into consideration when deciding on an appropriate sentence. The proposal by the Hate Crimes Working Group is supported by the committee, by the department. They argue that, they are in support of Clause 5.2, but recommend that the sub-clause should be amended to include the following, they list the sub-paragraphs that they would want to have included in sub-clause 2. And the department indicates here that the proposal is supported. Clause 5.2b requires that the prosecutor must address the court on the reasons for the absence of a victim impact statement. However, the department will submit a proposed amendment to the committee for consideration. Clause 6 then deals with the sentencing of offenders, and the sentence provided for with regard to hate crimes and hate speech is then supported by Lita Labantu and Kusatu. The South African Jewish Board of Deputies supports the provision for perpetrators to be sentenced in accordance with the jurisdiction of the court, and that hate crimes have been included in the minimum sentencing regime. The department has also noted that submission. The next submission is the bill establishes offences for hate crimes and hate speech by requiring that hatred of people due to shared characteristics should be regarded as an aggravating factor in sentencing, and by prescribing minimum sentences for such crimes, despite hatred already being considered an aggravating factor for statutory or common law offences, introduce a harsher punishment for crimes motivated by hatred. The introduction of statutory offence motivated by prejudice, intolerance or hate is generally accompanied by the introduction of a penalty. Many offences that are motivated by prejudice or intolerance, for example, murder, are under certain circumstances already subject to the minimum sentencing regime. However, this does not prevent the legislature from emphasizing that other forms of hate should be viewed in a serious light. The facts of the case will, among others, guide presiding officers to decide on appropriate sentences within the parameters determined by the legislature. The legislature, by introducing a statutory offence, is sending a very strong signal that these type of crimes, namely hate crimes and hate speech, will not be tolerated. It should also be briefly mentioned that the penalty for hate speech is a maximum penalty, which leaves it open to the discretion of the court to decide what an appropriate penalty in each case will be. The Films and Publications Board, they indicate that the 96 Act imposes criminal sentences for offences and highlights the maximum term of imprisonment. They argue that there appears to be a duplication of offences in instances where the prohibitions are similar. The offences and penalties listed in the 96 Act appears to be more detailed, noting the lack of a provision of a maximum fine that may be imposed under the bill. The department argues that the ambit of Clause 4 of the bill is wider than the hate speech provision that is reflected in the 96 Act. However, in any event, it is a prosecutor's prerogative to decide in which course to institute proceedings and which statutory provisions to use to prosecute an offence. The South African Human Rights Commission expresses the concern that the 8-year sentence for hate speech may exceed those of other state parties. Comparative research has revealed that hate speech laws vary among different countries as well as its related penalties. They expressed the view that hate speech should not be treated as a more serious offence than hate crimes. They are concerned that the bill may give the impression that a court may issue a reprimand to a person who commits a hate crime, but this option is unavailable in the case of a person convicted of hate speech. The department points out, Madam Chair, that the sentence proposed in the bill considers the South African context, as do other jurisdictions take into consideration their own context, which evidences the varying penalties in other countries. 8 years is the maximum sentence, depending on the circumstances of each case. And I may also just mention, by the way, Madam Chair, that our Annexure C consists of two documents. The second document is then a table which draws a comparison with other countries, the type of offences that they have enacted, and the accompanying penalties. The Association of Christian Media, actual and threatened civil hate speech litigation under PAPUDA has already severely inhibited public debate on controversial issues. With the threat of jail sentence, the effect on legitimate free speech will be greater. Up to 8 years is more than the penalty for housebreaking, for example, 5 years for a first offender and 7 years then for a second offender. The department responds by indicating that hate speech should nonetheless be considered in a serious light. What the bill requires is responsible and open debates in the public interest and not speech that is aimed solely at damaging the dignity of others. The next one that we would like to highlight, Madam Chair, is that penalties for hate crimes and hate speech should be increased in order to serve as a stronger deterrent. Recommend increasing the maximum sentence for hate crimes and hate speech and the introduction of fines and community service orders as additional penalties. The department's response is that many forms of hate crimes are already subject to minimum sentencing regime, and it is therefore not possible to increase penalties for these types of offences. And insofar as hate speech is concerned, it may be appropriate to retain the maximum of 8 years or a fine at this stage. Judge Broekhoven, the proposed jail sentence of 8 years, even for a first offender, poses a threat to freedom of religious expression. No one will be protected from such a jail sentence. The department does not agree with this, Madam Chair. The 8-year period is a maximum period of imprisonment. Sentencing is left to the discretion of the court to determine an appropriate sentence, having regard to all the relevant factors of every case, and it is not only limited to a term of imprisonment in any event. And then we also, once again, direct the committee to our Annexure C that provides a bit more information in this regard. Then under Clause 7, which deals with the national instructions and directives. Madam Chair, I know I highlighted this, but I think it's really not necessary for me to repeat what the department's response is in this regard, but the Western Cape government criticized the bill for not being drafted properly. And the example that they use is highlighted there in paragraph 2, where they say there is a typographical error in the sentence. The sentence is, or the sub-paragraph commences after a colon, and they argue that the capital T must be in a lower case. And of course, as you are well aware, that is not the instance. That's not the case. It must be a capital T after a colon. Clause 8 deals with the reporting on the implementation of the Act, and the Hate Crimes Working Group, among others, then submits that due to the public interest nature of hate crimes and hate speech, clause 8.2 must be extended to the public. The information contemplated in 8.1 must then be made available to the public. We will get into a bit more detail when we go clause by clause through the bill, Madam Chair, but the mere fact that the information must be submitted to the institutions that are listed in 8.2, and those are Parliament, the South African Human Rights Commission, the Commission for Gender Equality, and then the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities. We argue that the mere fact that the information must be submitted to those institutions will render the information submitted to those institutions automatically available to the public, especially when we think of Parliament, where documentation submitted to Parliament is public documentation and available then, of course, to the public. With regard to Clause 9, which deals with the prevention of hate crimes and hate speech, the submissions are there summarized, as well as the department's responses to that. And then in respect of Clause 10, which is the regulation provision, I'd just like to highlight to the committee that the Association of Christian Media argues that the Act will result in substantial additional costs to SAPS and to NPA, and recommends that prior to approving the bill, the cabinet member responsible for finance should be requested to approve a budget for the implementation of the bill after consulting with SAPS and the NPA. The department argues that provision is made for the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services to consult with the Minister of Finance where any draft regulations may have financial consequences, and we will again point that out to you during the clause-by-clause deliberations of the committee. Madam Chair, thank you. This brings me to the end of our summary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dupre. Our members, we've received the presentation. While certain matters were highlighted, obviously we considered the document in its totality. And I think members also would have had sufficient time to also go through this document. I'm of the view that we can take a break, a lunch break till 1:30, if that's okay with you. Also to allow members to gather your thoughts around what has been presented. And thereafter, if members have any questions for clarity, if you feel there are areas that you want a much more in-depth explanation on matters, you can actually raise that, and or if you have any other comments that you would want to make in relation to the presentations. I think that said, on members, it's now 10:50. Can I propose that at 1:30 we continue with the meeting? Our members?
Okay, Chair. Okay, it's fine.
Okay, that's it.
I agree also, Chair.
Thanks. And that's the Honourable Bardenos as well. Okay, no, it's fine. Thank you very much, Honourable. Let's take a break till 1:30. I prefer you don't log off if possible, but yeah, but at 1:30 we'll reconvene. Thank you very much. See you. Oh, yeah, we'll reconvene at 1:30.
Recording stopped.
Members, can I get an indication if we are all back?
Recording in progress.
Mikolakis. My notes.
We betcha.
Thanks, Honorable Bartlett.
Ndongeni.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Ndongeni. Yeah. GM, you back? The legal team?
I'm back, Chair.
Sure. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure all that Mr. Dupreer and the team work. Okay. I think most people are back. once again, welcome back to the meeting and thank you for keeping time. I think when we concluded, all members will note that in terms of the presentation that was made by the department, all clauses were covered except for clause 2, which is the objects of the ball. As I also indicated then that if you have any questions for clarity based on the presentation, that you would want to raise, just to clear some of the issues in your mind, you may do so. And if you also have any comments that you would want to make, if you can give me an indication by raising your hands, okay. I know we've been matters and some of them also through public engagement processes. Is there any comment that honourable members would want to make and or get clarity on any of the issues that were presented? Okay. If none, then I see Honourable Mikolakis, your hand is up. Perhaps the issue around that you wanted to raise around certain matters, please continue with that. And notwithstanding, if you have a question for clarity, you may also do so.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just trying to unmute. Chairperson, thank you very much. My questions I'm also now struggling. There's a new version of Zoom that seems to be quite confusing if you're used to the old one. Chairperson, yes, it's not so much questions than comments, and I have made some submissions that I have forwarded to the department and the committee last night. My apologies that they're a bit late or that you only received them the evening before. But hopefully we'll have some time to discuss still. Chairperson, my concerns are just with regards to the responses of the department that I think there are some legitimate concerns that were raised that I do think or that I would have hoped could have been entertained in possibly improving the bill. I have made two or three suggestions on what I think can and should be included in the bill to improve it. I have to indicate that there are more concerns that I still have with the bill, but these are the main ones. Also, the question of the constitutionality of the bill and so forth. I am not quite sure whether we would be able to necessarily come to an agreement, and if that's the case, then perhaps it is a question that should be determined elsewhere. For the sake of trying to to make some improvements to the bill. I have submitted three proposals. The one relates to Section 4, which is the offence of hate speech, in which Section 4.2 can be perhaps extended or expanded a bit and improved to address some of the concerns that were raised by some of the stakeholders during the public participation process. Then members would have seen Section 6 with regards to the penalties. I did make the proposal that, and it was raised by members of all parties, about the specific sanction as well. And over there, I just included the initial wording that the department tabled in the initial bill, which I think is something we need to return to. And then finally, I've made an attempt at a definition of hatred. Now, I do agree that it is very, very difficult and possibly, arguably, impossible to define hatred, in which case, if some of these concepts are impossible to define, as I have heard from various stakeholders and the department, then I am afraid that we are trying to attempt the impossible. But as a second prize, I have made my attempt to try to define hatred in the best way possible, to be able to limit the possible confusion for the public in terms of what the actual crime would be. I still stand with the argument that we can't, for criminal law, use a dictionary definition. It must be clearly defined, in my opinion, in the legislation, so that the public knows before they commit the crime exactly what the crime is. You can't make it up as you go along. I respectfully still stand with that submission, and therefore I have made an attempt to try to come up with a definition, which I truly hope between the department and the members, some of it can be taken on board. So, Chairperson, I don't have specific questions with regards to the submissions made by the department today, although I do want to indicate that where we have, from public participation side, had people with a legal background making submissions on some of the points, almost all of them agreed that there are here and there issues which I still don't think are being addressed. And the submissions that I've made last night are my best possible attempts to try and, if the bill has to pass through this stage, that that we consider these amendments so that we can pass as a committee the best possible version of it. And I would very much like to engage with my fellow committee members on these, as well as hear the comments from the department and the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mikolakis. We'll take it that the document you submitted to all of us is officially kind of...
Chairperson, would you like me to take you through it to officially table it, or it has been circulated to the members as well as to the department? If you'd like to officially go through it, I'm happy to do so as well.
Maybe what I would want to know, perhaps from the side of the department, I know the document you referred to came quite late, Honourable Mikolakis. Perhaps if the department also would give an indication on whether they would be able to perhaps respond to some of the issues that are raised. Is there any other member of the committee that would want to raise any other issues for now? I know Honourable Du Toit's hand is up. I'm not ignoring it, Honourable Du Toit. I'll come to you. Okay, if there is no other member, then maybe on Du Toit, I can give you an opportunity to speak in the committee.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, for the opportunity. Honourable Chair, I don't want to be repetitive, We all have seen the submissions that were tabled, and we've listened and taken cognizance of the department's response to these submissions. But if the department can maybe just tell us which of the proposals or suggestions that were made or that was tabled in these submissions were actually taken note of, in the sense of the department changing the proposed bill. Because there are numerous instances where it's just stated as noted, but I couldn't see in the presentation this morning where they actually altered the bill to be in accordance to the request or the proposals by these institutions or political parties. Chair, also, I mean, I think we cannot stress the fact too much that the bill is vague in the definitions, and it was definitely put certain in no uncertain terms this morning that a lot of these definitions are open for interpretation by the courts, and that is something that we must definitely look at. I think this bill can be interpreted or handled with in a reckless nature. I mean, a lot of the individuals, as well as the people that participated, stated that this can be used as a political tool, and I think that we must just heed, because it is very concerning, Chair. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Dutoy. Maybe some of the issues you raised have been dealt with by the committee previously, but I think in terms of let me not speak on behalf of the department, but I think when they did make a presentation, there were, I think, three areas that they agreed to consider, that they would consider. But obviously, it would be a decision of the committee. Maybe if I can, is there any other member? Okay. Maybe if I can perhaps see from the side of the department, the issues, you could respond to the issues raised by Honourable Dutoy, although some of it would be taking us a bit back. But the issues that were raised by Honourable McLarkus in terms of the document that he sent through, whether from the side of the department you have any response to that, you could perhaps give me an indication.
Chair, sorry, I'm now in a meeting venue at the airport. Chair, if the department, if the officials can start with a response to Honourable Michalakis's proposals, and also to thank him for sending them to us last night, so that rather than springing them on us in the meeting, but can they start, and then I'll come in at the end. So if I'll hand over to it's DDG Pillay, Mr. Dupria and Ms. Buerta that I've seen on the platform, if I can hand over to them.
Okay. Mr. Dupria, I saw earlier you put on your mic. I'm not sure if you're going to go with it.
Madam Chair, I'll follow my DDG. I actually wanted to respond to the questions raised with regard to, among others, where the department only indicates noted, but I'll explain that to the committee afterwards. May I just ask, Madam Chair, whether it would be possible for the document or the proposal to be flighted? That might make things a bit easier, especially when one starts talking about certain paragraphs and subparagraphs. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sure, Gershwin, are you able to deal with that better? You would direct us, Mr. Dupria, where you want us to go, right? I'm not sure who's going to begin to respond. Is it Ms. Pillay?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think let Mr. Dupria start and Ms. Buerta after that, and then I'll come in the end if it's necessary. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I think the document Mr. Dupria is referring to is the response, Mr. Dupree, if I'm correct, you wanted the responses of the document that talks to the responses of the department to the public comments, right?
Madam Chair, the document at the moment is the correct document that we
would like.
That's
the correct document. Okay, great. I'm a bit confused. All right. Please continue, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, with regard to the proposed amendment of Clause 4, the offence of hate speech, in paragraph A, and it was something that we have also pointed out in our response to the public comments, the request was that literary, comedic and satirical creativity also be included expressly in paragraph A, among others, motivated on the grounds that there was a recent amendment to the film, I forgot the act name. Yes, Madam Chair. Now, the department's point of view at this stage is still, Madam Chair, that it's not necessary to include a reference to literary, comedic, or satirical, because we have that overarching word of artistic, and then once again the department actually in our summary raised the question, but what about then about musicians or poets? So I don't know whether that proposal will take the matter any further. I'm going to mainly focus on technical issues, Madam Chair, and then I'm going to ask Ms. Buerta to also weigh in if there's anything that she would like to highlight, and then, as my DDG indicated, she will round our, if I may call it, criticism or attack on the provision, she will round it off. With reference to paragraph D, the proposal there, Madam Chair, it's stating the obvious according to the department. It's a confirmation of the existing law. So including the words as protected in section 15 of the Constitution does not really take the matter any further. The department would then, of course, not support a proposal of that nature. In paragraph E, reference to political debate is a bit concerning because the word debate is a bit confusing to the extent that are we talking about a member of one political party saying something in public and then a member of another political party responding to that? Is that what is meant here? Because then I suppose whatever who says, both of them will be protected in terms of 4.2. If I, as a member of ABC political party, make a statement in public, but there's no one responding to my statement, would I be able to argue that whatever I have said in good faith, in a bona fide manner, is a political debate? And then once again, it's difficult to see I'm not sure about the necessity of including political debate here. With regard to the proposed amendment in paragraph, I think there's just a format problem, and the drafter of this could possibly confirm this, but I think after the included words at the end above, I think the remaining sentence must be outdated. I don't think if it forms part of paragraph F, then it means paragraphs A to E will not be covered by that last phrase that does not advocate hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm based on one or more of the grounds. Now, with regard to paragraph F, the sharing of anything done in good faith contemplated in A to E above. This is purely a subjective test being created here, because the person who shares the information could subjectively believe that whatever has been said was done in good faith. So we don't think that the provision really captures what is intended to be captured, because a subjective test, it's doubtful whether it will be successfully applied here or... Madam Chair, my deputy raised his hand.
No, if I can come in on E when you've finished, it was just for the chair to see that I wanted to come in before you move on to the next section.
Well, that's the opportunity now, Minister.
Okay, thanks. No, just on E, yeah, Chair?
Okay, on E. No, sorry, I didn't hear that. Okay, on E.
Okay. No, just on political affiliation or conviction is a characteristic, which means that it applies to hate crimes. And it's there because in South Africa, people have been killed because of their political affiliation or conviction. It is not, though, listed as a ground for hate speech. And although, as I said, people do get killed because of their political affiliation and there can be incitement, it wasn't included because we didn't want to limit political debate, genuine political debate, same as occupation or trade. There was some commentary that it means you can't, if that was included as a ground, so currently only applies to hate crimes, but if it was included as a ground for hate speech, you wouldn't be able to criticize politicians or things like people like that. So I'm not sure, I'm not sure why Honorable Mikolakis wants E. I mean, obviously I support the other points Mr. Dupria has said, but what's the necessity of E? And you also want to ensure that in terms of political debate, that if one, and Mr. Mikolakis, you would have seen it, I think the NCOP is a bit more reserved, but the National Assembly isn't. If in the debate somebody starts raising an issue with a person's sexual orientation, their ethnicity, their religion, even though that doesn't constitute incitement to cause harm, that's not going to be acceptable, as it wouldn't for any other member of the public. So what I'm really saying is I think there's already provisions that protect political debate, but obviously in that political debate, you need to stick to the rules. And you can't be insulting somebody in that debate on the basis of their sexual orientation, their religion, their ethnicity, those kinds of things. Sorry, I just wanted to add that point. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, DM. Mr. Dupree, are you done with this one?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we can go to number two now.
Okay. Gershon?
Yes, the penalties, well...
Just a moment, Mr. Dupree. I see... I'm sorry, I haven't been looking at the raised hand. Honorable Kalakis, is your hand being raised? Or is it a legacy hand?
Sorry, okay. Chair?
I wasn't sure if you raised it now or was it the...
No, Chair, I just wanted the opportunity to respond once Mr. Dupria and the Deputy Minister is done. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem, Honourable Gladys. All right. Okay, the second issue
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we can actually move towards number three then, because the whole issue of penalties, the department does not really have anything to add at this stage, apart from what we have put on record in the committee regarding the criticism around the 8 years maximum fine or imprisonment. So when we get to the definition of hatred, please. Mr. Dixon, can we go to the definition of hatred, please? Thank you. Now, Madam Chair, this definition and Mr. Michalakis admittedly indicated to the committee that it's not an easy task, but the department feels that this definition, I don't know, there's a lot of criticism on a technical level. If you look at, for example, at the wording of paragraph A, an extreme emotion of all those factors read conjunctively towards members of an identifiable group, that is a tall order to be proven in a court case, because all those factors must be proved in order to determine or to comply or with paragraph A. If you look at paragraph B, predicating on the
Mr. Dupriya, we don't hear you.
It's an odd concept to get your head around. And then paragraph C.
Okay, oh, just a moment, Mr. Dupriya. I remember, did you hear the explanation on paragraph B? Because I couldn't hear anything at that point.
Chair, if we can get a repeat, please.
Please, okay. Mr. Dupriya, at Thank that you, point, ma'am. You seem to have blanked out. So if you could just repeat what you said on B.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I merely indicated on a technical level that it's difficult to understand why paragraph B should be, and this is very important, Madam Chair, because I'm going to indicate to you something else after I've gone through paragraph C. But with regard to paragraph B, it's very difficult to understand why that paragraph should be limited to the destruction of a group. One thinks, for example, of other negative impacts that may be visited upon a group, for example, victimization. So it's difficult to understand why it's only limited to destruction. And then if you look at paragraph C, direct and intentional vilification and ill treatment of members of such groups. So both those factors must be taken into consideration, must be complied with, and ill treatment is a bit different from, well, it's a lot different from destruction. But the problem here, the main technical problem with this definition is that paragraphs A, B, and C must be read conjunctively. So in other words, it's going to be extremely difficult to prove when you prosecute someone under Clause 4 that hatred was present. So on a technical level, I would like to stop there. I think Ms. Buerta would like to also add a few points of criticism. I don't know whether she would like us to go back to the first provision, then the proposed amendment of Clause 4.2. But with your permission, Madam Chair, I would like to hand over to Ms. Buerta then.
Ms. Buerta?
Thank you, Chair. If we could please go back to that first provision. Thank you, Mr. Dixon. I'm going to echo what Mr. Dupree has said, and that literary, comedy, comedic or satirical don't take the provision further. I think that the phrase artistic creativity, performance or expression are wide enough to cover any range of written or oral creativity, performance or expression, and that obviously includes anything literary, comedic or satirical. So I don't know that specifying those, and like Mr. Dupree said, to the exclusion of other forms of creativity, performance or expression, would serve to, you know, take anything further. Then the addition of the phrase as protected in Section 15 of the Constitution, I am not sure that that necessarily takes things further either. I think it's also important to note that A, B, and C, which are expressed in Section 16 of the Constitution, there hasn't been an amendment or a proposal to add in that those are protected or as protected in Section 16 of the Constitution. So I'm not sure why it would serve to better protect religious rights to add in that it is found in Section 15 of the Constitution. I think that that is self-explanatory, as A, B, and C are self-explanatory of expression rights in Section 16. And on the addition of political debate, I am not certain that that should be excluded, because I think that in certain instances, something which falls within the realm of political debate can actually amount to hate speech. I think it's also something to consider about what would political debate mean and what would the bounds of political debate be. Would it include, for example, something said at a celebration, something said at a certain political party's event, like Mr. Dupree said, that is not responded to. I think it's just important to consider what political debate is and what the bounds of that would be, and whether that would only cover debate within Parliament or more official forms of debate. On the sharing of anything done in good faith contemplated in 8E above, I think that may require further amendment to the lead-in words to clause 4(1)(a). And that currently reads, any person who intentionally publishes, propagates, advocates, makes available or communicates anything to one or more persons in a manner that could reasonably be construed to demonstrate a clear intention to, one, be harmful or to incite harm, and two, promote, propagate hatred, is based on one of more of the grounds, guilty of the offence of hate speech. But I think the important words there are that any person who intentionally publishes, propagates, advocates, makes available or communicates anything. So I think if we want to, or if the proposal is to exclude the sharing of something, of anything done in good faith in A to E above, it would then require potentially an amendment to 4(1)(a) where you can publish, propagate, advocate, or make available or communicate any of those things, and that amounts to the offence of hate speech. As Mr. Dupree said, the issue on penalties, the department has no view. We did provide to the committee an HSC2, which was sort of a conspectus analysing 10 different jurisdictions across the world where there are hate speech and hate crime, or rather hate speech offences, and the corresponding penalties for those, to simply show that there is a wide range of penalties which are available and used throughout the world. On the last point on the definition of hatred,
I agree with Henk. It would be a tall order to read all of those conjunctively, and it may mean that it narrows the protection that the bill seeks to seeks to extend to. I also think that the definition might lead to greater issues than it attempts to solve. And so I think that, and to add on to that, I think that hatred has been judicially interpreted, but now we are requiring courts to interpret extreme emotion, detestation, enmity, ill will, malevolence. And those, I would assume, would take their ordinary dictionary definition. I think it's also important to note that the definition of hatred needs to be read together with the definition of harm. And the definition of harm stretches wider than destruction. It stretches wider than the destruction of the group. It